This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
We call it the place to be.
Yes, the place to be. Then I shall be.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
It is contagious. It is the place to be, and we are live each and every Monday.
To do worse than Josh Richard.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to 2018, and welcome to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be Podcast, coming to get you live here on this New Year's Day, Monday evening. As always, joined by my PIC for the, I meant to think of the number of years, is it 7th year, 8th year, I don't know.
Is it a big calendar? 7th. February, is it February 3rd?
It's our 8th year. 2011 we started, we're into 2018.
All right, so 11, 12,
yeah. Do you guys send flowers to each other on anniversary dates?
Not at this point, Pete. It's kind of going cold, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, no, it's like too old. You know, it's like when you get really old and you have separate beds in the room, like the Bradys or whatever. And it's all that past now. Yeah.
Okay.
JR, Happy New Year. Happy New Year, everyone. Welcome to episode 476 of the longest running episodic gold standard.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been a good New Year's weekend, good Christmas week, obviously.
Yeah, been a busy one.
It was a busy one, absolutely was. And you heard a voice in the background. Why don't we bring him in?
He waits for no introductions. He is, of course, he's our fourth man down, fourth or fifth guy down here on the Place to Be podcast. He always is up for joining us for one of these reviews. He is a I don't want to say wrestling Rain Man, I guess. That's how I like to put it. He just rattles shit off left and right. He's a beautiful man. He was my pillow at WrestleMania 33. And, of course, you can hear him each and every week on the WorldCast podcast on the Pro Wrestling Only feed and many other guest spots as well, including a wonderful turn in our Christmas special this year. And that is Sheriff Pete Schermacher. Pete, how are you, sir?
Doing fantastic, boys. How's it going? Happy New Year to y'all.
Awesome, awesome.
And
welcome.
Everyone else out there.
Did you enjoy your visit to the Christmas special this year?
It was interesting. I've never done anything like that, so you know,
it was a lot of fun. You were great. You were one of my favorite parts. I will say that.
Yeah, I mean, I got into character. I mean, yeah. They told us to ham it up, so hell, I can do that.
Definitely hammed it
up. That's Johnny Sorrow level hamming it up, but I can ham it up.
No, that's next level. It's definitely not that. But no, I enjoyed your Western motif that you brought to the play as Sheriff Pete. So that was fantastic. And welcome here tonight to talk a little Madison Square Garden, Scott. Is that correct?
We are, JR, as we continue our summer of house shows like we do every the first two calendar years of our refresh, 1985 and 1986. We also didn't have any Saints main events or anything like that. Mm-hmm. We pretty much were in our home office for the entire summer, and we are again. As we are doing what? Our third consecutive house show since WrestleMania, or since the Saturday Night's main event after WrestleMania 3. So we're back at the Garden again. The date this evening, gentlemen, is July 25th, 1987. Again, from 33rd Street, otherwise known as Madison Square Garden. Once again, now, JR, we've talked about it, and Pete, you know this as well. Vince used to split the roster into thirds. On their trips, there was, you know, the A line, the B line, the C line. We had the roster was not great at our June house show because it was pretty thin. It was not good. Does that hurt tonight? Well, let's see. Now, in June, the other two rosters were in the middle of, nowhere. Not as bad here. Although this does kind of tie into fun fact notes from the last show, JR. So one third of the roster is, of course, here at the Garden. One third of the roster is at the Viking Hall in Bristol, Tennessee.
Ooh.
And all Graham Coughlin has from the history of WWE.com, WWF World Champion Hulk Hogan versus Randy Savage. So obviously a great match. But fitting, JR, because we talked with Kelly on the last show about the fun fact that Greeny put in about Lawler – suing or sign, you know, some injunction against the WWF for Harley Race being the king of wrestling. And Kelly goes, yeah, they never really go down there much. Well, guess what?
There they are.
They're in the state of Tennessee tonight. So, however, Harley is, I don't believe he's here. Well, let's go to the other third of the roster. The other third of the roster was actually in a WWF hotbed at the time and still is today. They were at the arena in Baltimore, Maryland, which, of course, was, you know, where TNT was taped and the headquarters and all that kind of stuff. So, used to be. So, here was the card there. Now, here's an interesting thing. 3,948 was the attendance at the Viking Hall in Bristol, Tennessee, which was a sellout. The arena had 4,197 in Baltimore. That's obviously not a sellout. That's not even close. So, not a big crowd. Obviously, people probably on vacation and et cetera. Here's the card. In Baltimore, Steve Lombardi pinned Jose Estrada. There's a hot opener for you. Lanny Poffo defeated Iron Mike Sharp. Jim Brunzel and the Junkyard Dog, who pinch hit for B. Brian Blair, defeated Kamala and Sika. What that for a weird team. Don Morocco pinned Bob Orton Jr., JR. So that might be something we need to keep tabs on over the next couple of months. Maybe something character-wise in the works for the Magnificent Morocco, mm-hmm. facing his former tag team partner. Here's a big one. Ken Patera pinned Paul Orndorff with Bobby Heenan in a whipping match after Heenan accidentally hit Orndorff. Mr. T, who was the outside official, made the pinfall after the original referee had been knocked out. After the bout, Orndorff left ringside without Heenan. Interesting. And your main event, actually no, well, this is probably the better match. We had the Women's Tag Team Championship match between the Glamour Girls, of course, Judy Martin and Leilani Kai, and a new team, which we will not mention now because they'll be coming to the Garden at some point, so we will not talk about them now, but they did wrestle a up-and-coming team from overseas, which we will talk about down the line. And your main event, George Steele defeated Danny Davis.
All right.
Yes, that's about what the crowd sounded like in Baltimore.
Silent.
So, anyway, so there you go. So, so the other third of the roster is here, and when we get to the match, including that involves Danny Davis's guys, I have a very interesting theory about what provoked breaking them up. But anyway, we'll talk about that down the line. JR, what do we have for any more? Tidbits before we begin.
We do have that, but I actually have a couple of tidbits from our last episode from our buddy Joe O.D. over on our Place to Be Nation Facebook page. Just wanted to kind of circle back to some of his comments. He was not happy with our review, by the way, of the Shadows and Can-Am Connection. He loved that match. If you want to read his thoughts, it's on the Facebook page there. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but he gives a reason why he thought that match was better than we gave it love for. But he does have a couple of other interesting notes here. He said, finally, the reason they totally ignored Billy Jack Haynes' earlier performance was due to Primetime Wrestling and All-American Wrestling, both on USA Network. The undercard matches were used on those shows, but only selected ones. If they chose to use the six-man and not Haynes versus Herc, it may confuse the national audience. They usually had to commentate each match in a vacuum, which I guess is true. I'm trying to think back. I guess most of these cards seem to be existing in a vacuum, commentary-wise. I would say how many people are really going to notice or give a shit, probably, if they happen to mention that Haynes wrestled earlier. I mean, I think it's clear the matches are coming from some sort of card, but I get what he's saying. I mean, I'm guessing that's probably the reason. Pete, any insight on that one?
No, not really. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, clearly, Primetime Wrestling, that's what they did. They called a lot of the undercards from the, I mean, some of them they'd even shoot a punt-on, pull a punt-on from Madison Square Garden. They usually had their standby, you know, they had their staples of like Madison Square Garden, the Spectrum, Boston Garden. I think they did Houston a lot. They just had certain areas where they just shot a lot of their undercard and used that for Primetime Wrestling.
There you go. And he also weighs in, saying, here are the matches for the NWA title matches where Hogan had the shot at against the NWA champion. If you remember, we talked about that at length last episode. 1979 with Harley Race as champion, Hogan as Terry Boulder, challenged on May 24th, 25th, 20, and then July 6th, and sometime in July, all in Dothan, Alabama, or Mobile, Alabama. Of course, Dothan's a hotspot of Place of Nation action, so there you go. 1983, Harley's champion. He fought Hogan in St. Louis, and then Harley and Hogan in 83 in Kansas City. So, Pete, have you seen any of those Hogan-Harley matches?
No, I have not. I mean, from the 80s to the 70s? No, I don't even know if they exist on tape. Dothan was the big show. That was the big town for the Alabama Continental Circuit. I've never seen the Hogan-Harley stuff.
Dothan, Alabama sounds like the place that Sheriff Pete would live.
That's where they always have the Continental reunion shows each year.
Oh, there you go. So Greg Phillips down there
Sheriff
checking out.
Pete has not been to one of those.
He should mosey on down. You can visit with Greg Phillips and check out Colonel Parker's big schlong down in the Continental. You think you have to like, pay extra to see that? That's like $75 meet and greet.
Meet and greet, a handshake.
He'll take it out. Yeah, I don't know if you want that handshake, Pete. What he would be shaking your hand with. All right, so let's take a look at the Jason Greenhouse fun facts. Of course, you mentioned last week, he took over for Jeff Jarvis here in the podcast. Jeff was still helping us out with the written vintage full refresh. I want to thank Jeff for all his help since we started this reboot and welcome in Jason Greenhouse, who I think is earning it to 2007 with our notes, so we're in good shape. All right, so since our last show, which was June 14th, according to an article in Daily Tribune out of Royal Oak, Michigan, a match between Bruno Sammartino and Jesse Ventura, deemed Ventura's farewell match, was scheduled for 6/20/87 at the Spectrum, but never took place. So, interesting there. On the 6/27/87 Superstars, we had a vignette promoting the debut of a new character, the Million Dollar Man Ted DiBiase. He received a paper cut from counting his money, and his bodyguard, Virgil, drove him to the nearest hospital, where he paid several $100 bills to receive immediate attention. Prior to a match featuring the Honky Tonk Man, Howard Finkel introduced Mr. T as a new enforcer of the WWF. We'll talk about that later tonight, because it's mentioned a couple times. So, Mr. T back in the fold. And after a match featuring Ken Patera, the Heenan family attacked Patera and began whipping him with Bobby Heenan's belt. As the show came to a close, Ken Patera was shown backstage along with Billy Jack Kane's and Brutus Beefcake recovering from the attack. On 7/24 at a house show in Houston, Texas, Sherry Martel, a newcomer that we'll be talking about as well, pinned WWF Women's Champion the Fabulous Moolah to win the title at 7/56. That would end Moolah's reign, and she would not be champion again for, 12 years. But for all intents and purposes, like actual title reign, she's now done as champ.
Let me interrupt you real quick. Yeah. They pushed that hard on this MSG show.
Big time.
Yes, yeah. Gorilla mentions it often. Yep.
Have you guys, has that match ever popped up anywhere? Or is that kind of a whatever
throwaway? I've never
throwaway?
Seen it.
Yeah.
Let me check history. Let me check Graham, because he'll usually put whether it was on TV or not. So keep going over your notes.
Then again, I've never been a person who's actively looked for like Moolah matches.
You mean she didn't make your greatest dirty wrestler ever, Pete? So you weren't searching out her hidden gems?
She did not, but Sherry Martel did make my list.
Excellent. And of course, ballots did close at midnight earlier today, I guess, almost 12 hours ago now. I'm sorry, almost 24 hours ago now. And the results, that we had a nice amount of ballots that we're excited about. The results are good. I think like 330-something people got at least one vote. So we'll be revealing those in audio and written form in the weeks to come. So stay tuned. But thank you to everyone who participated in that project. It was a lot of fun.
That was huge. It's amazing, JR, when we started talking about it in what? May?
Yeah.
April?
May, I think we started it, yep.
Yeah, May. It was like Memorial Day weekend, right? I think we started firing up the nominees and everything, and we've
yeah,
come,
Will,
we've
Will
come
posted
to the end
of more one night on Facebook than he has in his whole life. Yep, that was that.
Yeah, night. Exactly. Yeah, and he had like 787 nominees.
Yes. On the 7/25/87 Superstar, Superstar Billy Graham made a return to the ring, defeated Steve Lombardi in 118. After the match, Craig DeGeorge interviewed Butch Reed and Slick, and Reed challenged Graham to a pose down for the following week. This was his in-ring return following hip surgery. Now, Pete, you have talked a lot about Billy Graham in the early 80s. Yep. Were you pumped for a late 80s Billy Graham resurgence here?
No. Not at all. I've always liked him. I mean, he's always had charisma. And, I mean, as a TV character, I always enjoyed him because, I mean, the guy could talk on the mic a little bit. Not as an announcer.
No.
He eventually he gets out of the ring again and he becomes Morocco's manager. But, and that didn't really work real well either. But, I've always enjoyed my time watching him when he's out of the ring. I never thought he was a good worker by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah, no.
But
especially
I
did
love
this
his
point.
Old Bruno matches. I thought his Bruno matches felt very Hogan Warrior-esque in mm-hmm. a way.
Now, did he make your list?
Superstar Billy Graham?
Yeah.
Man, I thought he did, tell you the truth. Yeah, he did. He did.
Yeah, he made mine too. Scott, you?
Yeah, I mean, just influential. I mean, under the New Japan system, I mean, he did kind of...
You know what? I have to look. I don't exactly remember if he did or not.
I had him somewhere toward the bottom third, I think.
Yeah. According to Graham, the match never aired on TV. It was, as we said, it was the day before Sam Houston Coliseum. It is on Best of the WWF Volume 15 and the Women of the WWF.
Oh, there you go.
So it is documented on VHS somewhere, but it was, according to Graham, it was never on television. I'm sure maybe they did like a clip or something,
right?
You know, maybe on, there had to have been a TV there somewhere, I would think.
Yeah. But, I mean, best of the WWF tapes, they used a lot of house show matches as well. So it wasn't just prime time that usually pull from those. Those are like almost all house show matches. I feel like the best, at least the early ones before they kind of got further into the canon, but it was a lot of the house show matches utilized for that too. All right. Why don't we get to our card here tonight? Gorilla and Al welcome us in for this month's card, run down some of the key matches. And we open up with Dino Bravo back again this month, taking on our buddy now, or new buddy, I should say, and that is the one and only Mr. Brady Boone, who was born Dean Peters on August 22nd, 1958, in Robbinsdale, Minnesota, as so many other wrestlers were. Started his career in 1984, working for Pacific Northwest with Don Owen, wrestled under the ring name Brady Boone, billed as the cousin of Billy Jack Haynes. After teaming with Haynes, Boone won the tag team titles twice in 86, first with Coco Samoa in March 29th, and then Ricky Santana October 4th, and became a full-time wrestler with the WWF on July 2nd, 87. P, any non-WWF Brady Boone news or notes or must-sees?
I thought his Battle Cat in WCW.
Well, that's later. WWF, he's actually in 90 as Battle Cat.
Yeah. Oh, you think beforehand? No, really, I have nothing on him.
Okay. Yeah, he kind of pops up here.
I remember him as a WWE jobber, WWF jobber.
Yeah, that's about it. And I know I think they tie him to Billy Jack eventually, which we'll see. So, all right, let's get to this match. Not a very promising opener on paper at all, as Brady Boone heads out for his big MSG debut to take on the Canadian powerhouse. Boone has a real good WWF look. I thought he could be on the radar for a push here when he first came out. Like, he's kind of got everything they're looking for. Bravo's with Johnny V as always, and his hamstring is taped very heavily. Bravo gets good heat here as Al talks about his strong abilities. Gorilla says Brutus Beefcake has vowed to disassemble the new Dream Team. Al also says that Brutus and the Dream Team haven't missed each other at all. Dino's pretty bulked up here across the board, looking swollen and bloated. And the two trade some arm work until Dino stomps his way into control. Dino hammers away as Gorilla says Brady should target the leg. Brady backflips away from a charge in the corner and then knocks Dino outside with a dropkick. Gorilla and Al talk about V's awful haircut thanks to Brutus as Bravo returns and Brady grabs a headlock. Bravo cuts down Brady and takes over with a sluggish clubbing strikes and then hot shots Brady across the top rope. Bravo cranks away on a chin lock as Johnny V pops in for commentary to bitch about his haircut. Bravo works a bear hug and slings Boone outside where V comes over and lands a shot as well. Brady comes back in and gets a sunset flip for two, but Bravo just chucks him to the floor again. V rams Boone into the table, and then Bravo grabs a neck vise when he comes back in and mares him over and drops a hard knee. Boone gets a backslide for two, but Bravo pops up and kicks him back down. Bravo then misses a charge in the corner, and Boone starts to kick away and lands a knee lift to rattle Bravo. Boone lands a terrible flying elbow because Bravo stops too early. And then misses a monkey flip in the corner, and Bravo finishes him with the side suplex. They tried here, but Bravo is just fucking terrible. There was a few decent spots, and it was rugged at times, but Bravo's timing is all off. Like, everything that was botched was because he was a step off on everything, and it made them all look bad. I went a half star just because it was kind of hard-hitting, and they tried, and Johnny V was kind of funny, but overall, this was not too fun to watch, Scott.
No, it sucked. I'm just trying to get my screen here. Your match time, 10:46 to open the show. Yeah, that was a bit rough. I gave it a dud. I don't know what the hell Bravo's problem is, but I don't know. Maybe he stopped at Dr. Zahorian before he came. I don't know, but I mean,
he lived in Dr. Zahorian's like trunk in his car.
Yeah, so I'm saying he probably lived in the fucking utility closet. But I mean, he was just a misshapen, bloated mess. I mean. I don't know what the hell happened. His hair looked weird. I mean, the only good thing is I liked when he had those cool Canadian tights, but those obviously don't last either. Brady Boone seemed like a guy that could have been maybe a workable mid-card guy down the line. You could have used him for something. He seemed, you know, he looked, he was a good-looking guy, kind of looked like Billy Jack, except, you know, he wasn't a Billy Jerk. But he, you know, he might have been somebody that could have been used, but this was not a good stage for him. I mean, Dino Bravo is just not good. And, I mean, we've seen some Dino early on when he was a babyface with the dark hair and Canadian heavyweight champion and stuff. But not – I mean, he wasn't this bad. I mean, this is atrocious. He is, I mean, he's fumbling around. His kicks are weak. It's just – it's not good. It's I couldn't even justify a half star. I mean, it was just bad wrestling. And I don't know where Pete – what happened to Dino Bravo. But, I mean, he was kind of a manageable guy for a while. I saw him in, I think it was Mid-South I might have seen him in, or maybe it was another,
maybe
somewhere
the
else.
AWA but, Canada version. I mean, he was good there.
He was fine there. And when he was, even here as a baby face, like in 85 or even 84, he was fine, but I don't know what the hell happened. I know, you know, Vince likes big dudes, but Jesus.
Well, he bulked up a lot and lost, I think he lost a lot of his speed and his cardio too.
I mean, he was just a I mean, he literally was like misshapen. I mean, it was awful. So I give it a dud, Pete. I just, it was awful. Not a good, way
see,
to Bravo.
See, I didn't hate it as much as you guys. I actually gave it a star and a half. I thought Brady Boone was really good here. Where, I mean, he looked fantastic, had a good up-tempo offense. I liked Boone's offense. I enjoyed Boone because he came across real plucky here. I really enjoyed the one spot where Bravo took over, where Boone was pandering to the crowd, and it led to a cutoff. So I enjoyed that, where his being excited, being in his first match in the Garden, kind of cost him. But Bravo's offense was lame, boring, just very mediocre. But I thought Boone led a spark to the match, and it wasn't as bad as a lot of these MSG openers to me, because I thought Boone was working for five guys in this match.
2018, you got Pete defending a Dino Bravo Brady Boone match. We're off to a strong start.
No, I'm not defending Dino Bravo. Okay, I don't think I defended him at all.
No, there. Boone did work hard. You're right. I mean, he was the only reason I gave anything to this. Bravo, I wish we could have seen Boone against someone else here, because Bravo. The spots that all get blown are always him just being a step off. Like, he's a step slow to that back elbow, and Boone looks dumb. You know, like, it always almost kind of costs Boone, even though it's not Boone's fault at all. It's just Bravo being completely out of position. And I got, you know, he was also carrying around that, obviously his hamstring was all fucked up. So they probably just needed him here to gut through it. And he maybe shouldn't even have been out there, because he's slow and awkward anyway. And then he's got this torn up hamstring that's clearly taped and slowing him down. So I'll give him a little bit of props for fighting through that. But no, Boone. I think Boone has a look, and you're right. I mean, he had some fire here, so I'm curious to see how long they give him before he just kind of shuttles down the ladder, if they give him any kind of push.
Well, he got zero. I would have liked him in a tag team setting, being a guy who does a lot of the selling, can, you know, you know, change the pace of stuff. But the one thing, like you said, he had the look of the WWEF, but the one thing he didn't have was the size, which was going to, you know, nuke him. I mean, because even, 1988 or 89, you have Owen Hart, who's a better worker than Brady Boone, and he gets no traction as the Blue Braves Blazer. Right. And he was doing cutting-edge offense and stuff with the flips and dives.
Not as handsome as Brady Boone, Pete. That's what matters.
Exactly.
That's a good point.
All right, why don't we head to our next match, which is a little notch better than this one for sure. And this is a singles match between Rick Martel and Tama. And if you remember last week, we talked about the big challenge laid down by the Can-Am Connection to take on the Islanders, and they had challenged them to a tag team match. But earlier today on Superstars, in an interview with Rick Martel, he announced that Tom Zenk had walked out and quit the WWF. And we covered that extensively with Kelly in the Tom Zenk bio a week ago. But yeah, they pretty much acknowledged that Zenk was a quitter and was on his way out the door and left the promotion. So they don't hide or sugarcoat that at all. Instead of the tag match tonight here, we get a singles bout. So I'll give my thoughts, but then I'd like your guys' thoughts on the match, as well as your thoughts on any disappointment from this going down to the singles instead of the tag. So here we go. Big bout from the fallout from last month. Guerrilla warns that Haku will not be far behind. And, of course, right on cue, he accompanies Tama to the ring. Martel's out next all alone as Tom Zenk is long gone, leaving Ricky by himself. Both Islanders jump Martel before the bell, but Rick fights through it and lays both out with a double clothesline and a dropkick to clear the ring, and the crowd is just going nuts. The Islanders regroup outside, and Tama comes back in slowly. He begs off a bit and stalls some before catching Martel not looking and hammering away in the corner. Martel dodges a charge and chucks Tama all around the ring until he bails again. Back inside, we reset with a lockup as Gorilla starts talking about all the managers making a play for a newcomer named Bam Bam Bigelow. Tama lands a shot to the gut and slams Martel but whiffs on a leg drop. Martel rallies the crowd and drops a pair of knees to the groin and then works the leg. And Tama pushes free and trades monkey flips until Martel lands a dropkick and works the leg some more as Haku is just stewing at ringside. Tama punches free with hard forearm shots and then stays in to lay in some more strikes. Tama's limping badly as he grabs a side headlock, but Martel breaks it with a shinbreaker and starts to work the leg again. Tama kicks Martel to the floor and shoves him into the post as he's limping around. Haku gets involved and stomps away too. Back inside, Tama pelts him with a back elbow for two and then locks in a trap hold, causing Martel to writhe in pain as the crowd is rallying him hard. Martel breaks the hold, but Tama kicks him down, goes back to the traps again. And a nice job by Tama there, too, because he's selling his dinged up leg after the kick, which I liked. Martel gets freed up again and goes for a sunset flip, but Tama blocks it with a punch. Tama goes back to the traps again, but Martel frees up quickly and whiffs on a blind crossbody from the middle rope, and Tama gets two on that. Tama stomps and clubs away and knocks Martel to the floor, and then Tama rams him to the apron and ties him up so Haku can come over and shove Martel to the barricade. Martel gets back in the ring but is wearing down as he's getting relentlessly pounded on. Martel finally lands a big knee lift to buy some space, but Tama comes back with an axe. Martel answers with a hard forearm to the face and lands some shots to the gut, but Tama cuts him off by going to the eyes and slamming him, but then he comes up empty on a dive off the middle rope. Martel heats up with a flurry and drills Tama with a back elbow to send him flying outside. Martel comes out and slams him onto the apron and the slingshots him back in a really nice spot. Martel keeps unloading and ties up Tama in the ropes and hammers him away and then dives into him with a cross body. Haku frees up Tama and Martel comes over and slingshots Tama into Haku for a near fall. The bell rings a bunch of times for some random reason and Gorilla now have no clue what's going on. Tama then takes advantage during all the confusion and gets a high cross body, but Martel rolls through and gets the win to a huge pop. The Islanders attack after the bell and beat Martel down, leaving him laid out. And Gorilla notes that Haku was there to help all night, and as soon as he got wiped out, Martel could take advantage. I like that story point there. I thought it was a ton of fun, great pacing, hard-hitting offense. The story with the Islanders double-teaming and Martel getting his window was a good one. I love the attack after, too, to keep the story going, because we're far from over with this one. The crowd really was into this, too. The trap spots even chugged along. Normally, those would slow a match down, but they didn't here. And Martel's just such an all-time great face. Tom is such an all-time great heel, and they meshed really well here. So I went 3 stars for this one, Pete. What did you think of this battle?
Yeah, man, I went 3 stars. And the reaction Martel got, I remember months ago, last year, we talked about who we thought might be able to replace Steamboat if he wasn't around. And my choice is Martel. And the reaction he's getting here kind of like, I feel like it kind of supports my argument where he could have been viewed as the intercontinental level because the reactions here were really strong for him. I really enjoyed this match. This is a match that I believe Dave Meltzer reviewed back in the day, and I think he gave it 3.5 stars. I really liked that double team pre-bell stuff. I like the psychology of it where they attack him before the bell rings, but once the bell rings, Martel makes the comeback so you don't DQ him. That's something like a lot of people nowadays, they would just ignore. Right. But I thought I loved the timing on it. The back and forth early was really good. I love the crowd's reaction for Martel's nut shot. Was really good. Martel's working the leg. And I thought Tama was fantastic selling it. And because, you know what, if you don't, you know, if you're not selling the leg, if you're working the leg, you're not reacting to it. You're working in a vacuum. And it's so crucial when the guy sells it and makes what you're doing matter. And that was just fantastic there. I love Martel's bump into the post where it leads to Haku cheap-shotting him. Yeah, we got a little bit of the 80s nerve hold here, but it didn't ruin the match. I mean, he took it down definitely a little not for me. Yeah. But I loved the near fall on the near finish. I thought these guys worked a really good match.
Your match time was – I don't know if there was a time limit, but it – Did Fink say 20 minutes right before?
I don't remember.
I don't remember either. Well, the time was 1947.
Yeah. So the bell ringing stuff was so weird, too.
Yeah. That kind of – that. I mean, it didn't hurt the match for me. I gave it 3.5 stars. This match was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe because visually I loved it so much based on what the hell I just watched before that.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like, well, the other end of the rainbow. But Tama just was perfect embracing this heel role.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about it last month or on the last show that of the two guys of Tama and Haku, Tama was the one who's like the personality of the Islanders, whereas I said Haku was the blunt force object.
Right.
And he just has that smarmy, obnoxious douche look that fits perfectly with a Bobby Heenan team and adds so much to this match. Tama dictating the pace, I applaud Martel for that, being the heel. Tama had to. You're talking about the nerve hold, Pete? 80s wrestling matches, to me, have a certain, particularly WWF matches, have a certain kind of formula to them. And regardless of who's in the ring, whether it's two fat shits or, you know, cool, two big power guys or two, you know, work rate guys or whatever, you always got to have that moment where the crowd needs to kind of build a little bit. So even when you're dealing with two awesome athletes like Tama and Martel, you've got to have, in my opinion, you've got to have that two or three minutes where we get kind of down and dirty, kind of slow things down and rebuild. So I'll never fault. It just depends on the guys and
yeah, I mean, I have
how
no
it's utilized.
With them. I have no problem with them slowing the pace down, but I just hate a nerve hold because it just looks ridiculous. And I'd rather.
Right. I see
a couple
that.
Of things I hate is a nerve hold, and I hate the Kevin Owens front face lock. you really can't do a whole lot. You with a front face lock, you eat up your opponent's facial, so you ruin that. I'd rather just see him work a headlock or work an armbar or something. At least they're working it, where at least they're in, like, it's a little bit more interesting than the dreaded nerve hold, which just seems so phony.
Pete, I'm fine if you never say eat up a facial ever again. But yes, the point was good. And Tama, you're right. I mean, I'm not a big fan of those nerve holds either at all. Tama was good with it. Because I liked how he was selling his leg, like during it, like that. Tama's just like peak heel work right here at this point. But him selling the leg so intently while in the hold was really cool too. So you have him selling that, and Martel, who's a great seller too, selling the hold. So it was like this perfect storm of good selling to kind of offset the trap hold, and the crowd being so fucking hot into this tail too. So it was just everything kind of made this click.
Mm. No, it definitely did. And I agree, Pete. I guess it depends on what you're using. If it's something that psychologically you're going to use later in the match, whether it's a leg move or an arm bar, something like that, I get it. And nerve holds look lazy. Maybe it's just the visual of looking lazy. But anyway, we won't belabor that. The ending took a little away, but not too bad. I don't know what the deal was. I don't know who screwed the pooch on that, but it I don't want to say it took away from the match, but it did kind of throw me off a bit because I feel like they had a good flow going and then lost it and then regained it at just in time. I'm glad the Islanders attacked him at the end, attacked Martel at the end to keep the heat going because they weren't sure whether or not, you know, Martel was going to get a tag partner or what the hell the deal was. So it was good to at least keep the Islanders' heat on them just in case they figure out what the fuck to do, because obviously they had something in mind,
right,
to replace Zink. So that was good. But I think top to bottom was a tremendous match. Martel is a pro. I mean, we all know that. I mean, he probably made almost everybody's, I'd like to think almost everybody's top 100 list. And Tama, like you said, JR, settles into this heel role perfectly. Now, we know next month in August, Ricky takes on the other half of the team. And Haku is a different case because he's a different kind of guy than Tama is. So I'm looking forward to that match and seeing how different that match is compared to this one, because obviously Haku and Tama are two different guys, two different styles. But this match was fantastic. It needed to be after that shit fest we just started with. So again, I think visually the match probably, I graded it higher than it probably was, but at the same time, it was really good anyway. So 3.5 stars for me and a tremendous, tremendous match to kind of keep a feud going that's right now somewhat fractured.
Hey, Pete, what are your thoughts on what the Can-Am Connections, Pete, could have been if Zenk didn't leave?
I think what ends up happening is, you know, I mean, Strikeforce was a damn good team, and mm-hmm. I mean, and with them, what they did with the Islanders, I mean, you guys didn't get to them. Those matches just rule. They're some of the best tag matches in the company, and probably some of the more action packed work rate matches in the 80s of the company easily. But with that said, Zank and Martel were a hotter act than Tito and Martel, a strike for us, the Can-Am connection. And I mean, they definitely were going to be tag champs. Obviously, Tito took that role and it just didn't click. And they went with Demolition pretty quickly, gave him a little 6-month run. And it didn't help because I remember Brett didn't want to put over the Strike Force in rematches. So they were having problems with that. So there was a lot of, I felt Brett was like, and I don't know why Brett didn't want to put him over, but I have a feeling it was because they were a put-together tag team and not a real tag team,
right,
with longevity. And I think he might have played game, would have been more game doing it with the Can-Am connection, but I don't know. But I feel the Can-Am, I mean, honestly, Zink shot himself in the foot by leaving.
Yeah, big time. All right. Any other thoughts on this match?
No, it was a tremendous match. It saved. It keeps the card going. The crowd was hot. And it saves us from maybe having a full blown stinker, because if that first match is any indication how the rest of the card was going to go, it would be even worse than last month's. But I think it saved the card and keeps us going for the rest of the evening.
All right, well, let's head back to the ring for our next match, and that is featuring the Natural Butch Reed taking on Hillbilly Jim, who we haven't seen in a while. Haven't seen him since December with the tuxedo match with Mr. Fuji. So,
oh God,
been a while since we've seen the old Hillbilly here. Big power match on deck. Butch Reed's been working his way up the ladder, looking for a win here at the Garden. Reed solo tonight, no Slick. Jim gets a nice pop as he stomps out, and Gorilla and Al talk about how he loves having a good time. Jim dances around the ring. We get started with some posturing and hijinks. And Al puts over Jim's physique for being an all-natural country boy. So he's trying to get across there.
Okay.
We finally get action as Reed grabs a side headlock but hits an immovable wall on a shoulder block attempt. Gorilla talks about Reed and Slick calling out Hulk Hogan and Billy Graham of late. Excuse me. Jim clobbers Reed with right hands and a headbutt, but drops his head and Reed boots him in the mouth. Jim dodges a knee drop and Reed rolls outside to regroup. Al says Butch is missing Slick here as the Natural slides inside. Jim jokes around to frustrate Reed and then wins a test of strength. Reed powers up, drives Jim into his knees and keeps him there with a kick to the gut. Jim fights up and breaks the hold and then stomps on Reed's hands as Butch bails again. Reed comes back and drills Jim with a sucker punch and then works him over with some methodical offense, focusing on the chest and choking away. Reed knocks him outside and kicks him there to keep him outside. Jim eventually rolls in, but Reed keeps stomping and clubbing away. Reed eats a big boot on a charge, and Jim cuts him down with a clothesline. But then Butch dodges an elbow drop, and Jim misses one too. Reed then catches Jim with a high knee lift and drills him with a clothesline and hooks the overalls for the win. Technically fine, a little bit boring in spots. Reed is slow moving at times, and Jim doesn't really inspire any offense or confidence either. Jim's comedy spots are a bit played out as well. I'm done with the hat stomping and the fucking big muscle pose thing he does, and just I've kind of had it. Good enough. It doesn't really suck or anything, but nothing exciting. Reed gets another win. I went star and a half on this, Scott.
Yes, your match time is 10:58. I gave it a star. Again, big dog and pony show. And I like Butch Reed. But a lot of dancing around. I mean, certainly not the match we just had. Hillbilly Jim, to me, I feel like he's already dated. Like, I think he belongs. And look, I love Hillbilly Jim. I do. He's one of the more enduring characters. Even with his, I mean, I couldn't stand any of his trash relatives, but I feel like it's time for him to kind of move on.
Yeah.
I feel like he doesn't fit with the roster. You know, this is a big spot historically for the company for Vince, because he's going to start, you know, acquiring more talent all over the place. And
see, I don't know if I feel like he needed to leave. Like, I think this is actually a decent role for him that he settled into. Like, he's not really on TV a ton. He's not really probably going to make many pay-per-views outside of a spot here or there. Lower card. He's not in the main events anymore. I mean, he does feel a little bit outdated and relic-ish, but I don't know. I don't mind him in this role. Like, if there's a role for him, this is probably it. So I don't think he needed to leave.
But to me, it's once they get Duggan, there's no real reason for Hillbilly Jim. I mean,
Yeah, but Duggan's kind of the upper card version, right, at this point. Like, they're playing to push him.
He's the upper card, but he's still not, you know, he's still just a fun character. That's, I mean, that's what they both filled that role. That's why they used to have, there used to be heat between the two of them. Because, like, Hillbilly was happy when Duggan screwed up and got fired from the company. Because they were filling the same similar role, which was Hulk Hogan's buddy.
Right, I concur with that. And I just feel like the you know what it is, JR? I wouldn't necessarily say it's the character per se. I feel like we need some more in-ring stuff. And most of this match was a lot of dancing around and BS. And Butch Reed could have been a pretty good, solid mid-card heel, but I feel like he matches like this doesn't showcase it enough. I mean, he does win by cheating, which is, you know, good. But I don't know. It didn't do anything for me. I feel like, again, maybe because we had such a great match before that and, you know, the crowd was kind of up. But, you know, Hillbilly's popular still. And, again, Butch is a good heel. I just didn't like the match, in a vacuum. But it was good for the crowd to see one of their, you know, babyface guys. And if you're an older fan, obviously he's like Hogan's protege thing, which they obviously don't bother with anymore because Hogan doesn't care. Here's your shiny boots, asshole. Hit the bricks. Here's your shiny boots, bitch. Yeah, so, I mean, it was all right, but I just feel like it felt dated, and I thought Butch Reed needed a, you know, something with a little less dancing around. But, again, one star, Pete, served its purpose. Butch Reed gets the win, and Hillbilly's Hillbilly.
I'm glad you used the term in a bubble. I gave that match a star and 3/4. And I felt the match worked on this card because of the shtick. And it was like the only match on the card that really did shtick and comedy spots. And so it was different than anything else on the card. I mean, it's just a shame to see Butch Reed working in that fashion because the dude is a great worker who stunk in the WWF. I mean, you always hear the stigma of, like, there's a lot of workers work rate went down with went to the WWF, and Butch Reed would be on definitely in my top 10 of worst, just forgetting how to become being a good worker. Because it wasn't in a bubble, because it had a purpose on the card, I enjoyed it a lot. It's not a blowaway match by any stretch of the imagination, but because it was so different than anything else on the card, it stood out and made me enjoy it a lot more than some of these matches.
Have you seen that TV match with Butch Reed and Tito, Pete?
That's the only good one I think he's had.
Yeah, that's about it, right?
Yeah.
I watched that for Jeff Lawrence Wrestling, and I was like, oh, shit, this is pretty good. Where was this Butch Reed the rest of the fucking time?
I know, exactly.
I think that's his only – I think he had one or two good Tito matches, and maybe – I mean, he didn't even have good matches with Steamboat. I mean, he was a terrible worker in the WWF.
Yeah. No, he was not at all any good. But anyway, so he gets to win here over Hillbilly, who may or may not should be being phased out. I don't know. Whatever. I always hate the Hillbilly Hulk up pose he does with the I hate that thing. I just want to punch him in the mouth every time he does it.
Oh, his little chest thing.
Yeah, where he puffs out his chest and like does the thing. And we've talked about this before, but he's got such a nice build, Hillbilly. Like, I'm always surprised they stuck him in those overalls. Like, when you actually look at him, he's like pretty built up top. Like Al said, natural country boy strength. And that the tuxedo match where they took off the overalls and everything else and the tuxedo, I'm surprised they hid him under the overalls for so long. I guess Vince's Hillbilly fetish won over his muscle fetish, I guess, on that one.
Yeah, I know, right? Well, they got rid of the other scrubs. So.
All right, so we'll keep rolling on here. For our next match is a big Intercontinental title match between the Honky Tonk Man, our new Intercontinental Champion, as we covered last week, against Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, the former champion. And according to our facts here, though, this is actually supposed to be Jake Roberts being subbed out still from that injury. So Steamboat gets the rematch when he maybe wasn't supposed to. I guess he's back already from paternity leave that supposedly cost him this whole push. But
I think they had to beg him because it was like last minute with the Jake injury. Like they really begged him to come back early. And I think he got a pretty good payday out of it. I think this had led to some of the problems with him and Vince too.
Okay. Interesting. So does he stick around much longer after this, or does he take more time off?
Run with Honky, and then he feuds Rude in 88.
Well, no.
Like year.
Yeah, no, I know that. I meant like in the next few weeks or so. Like, did he just come back for this one shot while Jake was out for MSG and then go back on paternity? Or was he like...
They build that next match with, I guess, with Honky again at the next show. And then that's pretty much it. And then he comes back to, in like early 88 to start feuding with Jake.
Okay. You mean, no, he's done with Jake, right?
I meant Rick.
Yeah,
Rude.
I'm sorry. Okay. No, that's all right. I asked that all convoluted, so. All right. So anyway, Steamboat, I think he comes back here probably and then takes a little bit of time off. But so our new IC champ dances out to the ring with Jimmy Hart as he has to fend off the rematch from the Dragon. Gorilla notes how Jimmy now has two titles in his stable. Honky was a joke, but he steadily kept winning and feels like a much more of a threat here of late. And the gold adds to that for sure. Steamboat gets a huge pop, and the roar continues as he comes in hot and smacks Honky around and cuts him down with a chop. Steamer chucks Honky all around the ring, slams him and chops him, and gets a crossbody for two. Honky flails to the floor. Steamboat disrobes and follows out and unloads there, too. Back inside, Steamboat's all over Honky, crushing him with an inverted atomic drop. Gorilla informs us that Sherry Martel has defeated Moolah for the women's title in Texas last night, like we talked about earlier. Steamboat sends Honky flying with a backdrop and gets two off a small package. Steamboat follows with a back suplex and bridge for two, but the ref botches it and stops counting and stares at them as Honky picks up a shoulder. And by the way, one of the note on that Moolah thing, they keep talking about it, but they don't talk about it like it's a big deal, the women's title change. They keep talking about it as an example that anything can happen in these title matches. Like, they don't really give a fuck that the women's title changes. They just keep saying, like, you never know what can happen. An upstart can win the, you know, like, they keep selling it from that perspective instead. Mm-hmm. I thought that was interesting. So Gorilla's all over the ref as Honky's drilling Steamboat from behind and buries a knee to the gut. Steamboat turns the tide right away and hammers away, but Honky takes him down and regains control, getting a near fall with a blow off the middle rope. Steamboat punches and chops his way back into things and drops his head as Honky kicks him in the face. Honky punches away as Al says he's learned to be more merciless since winning the title. Honky whiffs on a leap to the corner and crashes to the mat. Steamboat brings some punches and chops and gets two. Honky goes to the eyes and buries some punches to the head, but Steamboat twists away and hits his own punches. Jimmy hooks Steamboat's leg, bringing the challenger outside to chase him around. Jimmy drops the megaphone for Honky on the way by, and the champ bops Steamboat with it for a real good near fall. The two trade blows from there as Honky grabs an abdominal stretch and then hip tosses Steamboat to the floor. Honky follows out, and they fight out there as the bell rings inadvertently yet again. Steamboat throws a soda in Honky's face and punches and chops away back in the ring. Steamboat follows with a chop off the top, but Honky stumbles to the floor, where Steamboat follows him, hammers away, and pitches him back inside. Honky keeps trying to escape and is hanging halfway outside the ring, grabbing onto the apron, and Steamboat yanks his legs viciously. The ref keeps counting and eventually counts out the champ, giving Steamboat the win, but not the title. Steamboat stomps on Honky and smacks Jimmy until they escape. I thought this was super fun. Real hot pace, a great crowd, lots of anger and energy mixed in. Probably one of the best Honky matches, at least to date, that I've seen, and probably going forward. He really carries his end of the bargain, too. This wasn't Steamboat carrying him at all. Honky sneaks away at the belt like a good smarmy heel, and Steamboat gets screwed, but he gets some physical revenge. I went 3 stars on this, Pete. I really dug it.
Yeah, I even went higher. I went 4 stars on it. I was low. Here's a question I got for you guys first before I get into it. Could Honky is in this time and place is with a heavyweight champion like Hulk Hogan, who's like, you know, the ultimate babyface who wins and always wins, is that the only time like a honky tonk man could succeed in wrestling and doing this, being this chicken shit? And like, I mean, the guy never beat anybody on TV. He was his squash matches. He'd always give the jobber offense before he'd hit the shake, rattle, and roll. Do you think the only way he could succeed was because he had such a strong heavyweight champion in Hogan in the company?
What do you think, Scott?
I don't know if necessarily it has to do. I mean, there's always a good balance. You always got to have a balance.
Mm-hmm.
Because particularly if in this landscape where Hogan has been champion for a while and has not going anywhere as champion, the IC belt is where you can really establish good heels. So the platform was there for Honky to really be that chicken shit who, you know, worms his way through everything. And literally, I mean, he even looks like a guy who didn't even win the belt. He kind of like stole it out of somebody's bag and kind of carries it around, or he bought it on the website or something kind of thing, you know, or not website, but you know, I think what it comes down to is when you've got a champion like Hogan, who's not going anywhere, and he is your ultimate babyface, you can use your Intercontinental title belt as well as your, you know, your tag belts and even other feuds to really boost the other heels, because eventually those heels may be challenging Hogan. So if you have a strong – if your champion is a heel or your main event feuds are involving the world title kind of being bounced around, then it does – it may kind of take away from what your mid-card feuds are doing, if that makes any sense at all. And – in this landscape, Pete, there's no doubt that with a stable world champion like Hogan, who's a solid babyface, who's vanquishing all the big nasty heels, you have the one heel that you really just want to get rid of, but you can't. So, yeah, I think in this landscape, it does work for Honky. He's not one of my favorite guys. He's a terrible wrestler. However, I'll get into my comments after you. But in this landscape with a solid babyface like Hogan, it does work for him because he's like the one guy that drives you bonkers, you know, and you think to yourself, because you think to yourself, oh, wow, could he actually be a guy that could steal Hogan's belt too?
Right.
You know, so
I think he's definitely built some legitimacy as well. Like, I mean, he's a guy that early when we saw him was kind of a goof. And ever since that Jake attack and win, he's really dialed it up. And I thought the Honky win, I mean, the Steamboat win definitely legitimized him a bit. And now here, it's not like he just came in and was sneaky the whole match and then ran. Like, he went toe-to-toe with Honky this whole bout, and then he finally gives up at the end. And I think that more points to him as, like, a smart champion versus a real pure chicken shit heel. I know he'll eventually develop, and I'm curious to see when it happens. I'm curious to see how long he stays, like, semi-legitimate heel before he goes down that path. Because I don't think he's there yet. I think we're still seeing him.
Yeah, no, you're right, because right now he has good heat, you know?
Right.
6 months, 8 months from now, when he has a belt still, he starts getting that go home, get a go away heat.
Right. Yeah. No, I agree. I'm really curious when the turn is, because right now he's a legitimate heat missile and he's earning it. Like, he's working his ass off in these matches trying to prove himself. Like, I don't think he's in coast mode at all. So I'm curious when things start to turn for him.
Yeah, I'm curious too. I think it's. I mean, it's after the Steamboat and Savage feuds, because I think that's one of the guys he was working with is probably the two best workers in the company when he was working with those two guys. I think it was after kind of where he started just having just screw job finish after screw job finish. I think it was during the Beefcake feud.
Right.
I think it finally was like, enough is enough. You've run away from these guys enough to the point where it became go-home heat as opposed to good heat. I really enjoyed this. Yeah, I give it 4 stars. I thought Steamer had a really great shine here. I thought the reaction to Steamer's near fall was nuclear. Honky Tonk Man's carrying a lot of heat here. And the only character, I think it only worked during like a Hulk Hogan title run because he's such a cheating scumbag.
Yeah, no, I think you're right.
And weak. And the crowd is totally behind Steamer. Huge kick out due to the interference. I thought that was a big time spot. Finally, you see, I mean, Steamer, I mean, took the shine for a good. It felt like Steamer took 75% of the match, and Honky was getting his ass kicked the whole entire time. And then he got a little heat on Steamer. He cuts him off. Again, crowd gets he sells enough for the crowd to rally behind him. Steamboat then makes a comeback again. And the finish is so honky-tonk and sets up the Lumberjack match, which is also another good match these guys have next month. But spoiler, you guys have your own opinion on it. I thought this was tremendous. I thought the psychology was great because, Steamboat has a lot of offense, and so he can carry 75% of the match. But because he's such a normal, great babyface seller, he doesn't usually do that in matches and lets the heels dictate it. And it actually made the match work even more here because Honky really doesn't have a lot of great offense. He throws a good punch.
Yep.
He has that shake, rattle, and roll. But he bumps real well. He does nice stooge spots. And I thought the whole entire thing of Honky cheated him out of the title. Steamboat's the better wrestler. Steamboat taking 75% of the match. And then getting the banana peel of Jimmy Hart and Honky getting that 10 count while Jimmy Hart is trying to pull Honky out of the ring, holding him for the 10 count. I thought it was brilliant.
Yeah.
Absolutely brilliant. I really can't put over the match as much as I could. I mean, I really like these Honky Tonk Man matches better than most Morocco Steamboat matches. And Morocco doesn't have nearly the stink on him that a Honky Tonk Man has.
Morocco has no stink. It's a magnificent
stink. He does have stink.
It's a magnificent stink. It's a magnificent stink. No, it's not. You know what, Pete? I also gave this 4 stars. Your match time is 11:39, and it did not feel like 11:39. Mm-hmm. It went really quick. This match was fantastic. Steamboat, and again, JR, the first thing I'm going to say is your theory hits the nail on the head here, that Steamboat is easily more entertaining when he is chasing than when he has it. Because it gives Steamboat the opportunity, and it was key here both in the pre-match promo, or the match, and his post-match promo, and then when he comes out later, we'll get there. When Steamboat dials it up, it means something, because he never does. He doesn't have to. He's always been that kind of level-headed babyface who cuts a moderately decent promo and then goes out and puts on an amazing match with whoever he's having the amazing match with. But here, he dials it up. I feel like he didn't even dial it up this much against Savage on TV compared to here. And then he comes out and he's just an animal. He's beating the shit out of Honky like those first like 2.5-3 minutes. And he knew how to get this crowd going. And the crowd was ready for this match. There's no doubt about that. The crowd was ready for this match because they were nuclear for this whole probably 16-17 minute segment, including the match. And Honky realized, look, if I'm going to be this long-term guy that's going to hold this belt for a while and be this chicken shit piece of crap, I've got to get off my ass and do some stuff and not just kind of fumble around like a buffoon. And he didn't here. I mean, he definitely brought his working boots and went with Steamboat while Steamboat dictated the pace as this crazed, you know. The gimmick is really going in, wow, Honky really must have done something to Steamboat to make him this pissed, because you don't see that out of Steamboat,
right?
Being this pissed,
not since Morocco,
right? Well,
I guess Jake, I guess Jake,
yep.
Too. And Savage. All right, never mind. we have seen it a bunch.
Yeah, we never, and I don't think, and this is not a knock on either guy because the feud was still great, the match is still, you know, awesome. But I don't even think you saw him this angry with Savage.
I don't know.
I mean, he did. But not like this per se. Maybe in some of the local promos, perhaps, because we never saw him here. We never saw them wrestle here, so we don't know. Maybe there were local promos in Toronto when they wrestled, or wherever, Boston or whatever. In any event, the match just took this pace that you didn't think it was going to take. This crazed kind of frenetic pace that I don't think anyone realized was going to happen. And when you got the megaphone shot, you thought to yourself, well, here we go. Honky escapes again. But when he kicked out of it, I mean, I if I was watching it live, which I probably was, I probably said, oh my God, Steamboat's winning the belt back. Because that's just the formula for a chicken shit heel to protect his title with a cheap shot behind the ref's back. And when Steamboat kicked out of it, you're live in that. I don't think there was any doubt at that moment that anybody in that building thought Steamboat was winning the belt back. So when that ending happened, and you know what is great about the ending? So simple. He just held onto the rope. He held onto the apron. Who else would have thought of that?
Yeah.
That, it was just so creative. Who would have thought of that? You know? So just everything worked. The psychology was great. And we may not see a better Honky match maybe ever again, depending who he wrestles. So, again, like you, Pete, 4 stars. And this might be our first four. This might be my highest graded non-Savage match. Mm. I'll have to look back, JR, since we've been doing, you know, what is this now, 2.5 years of house shows.
Yeah.
I don't think I have a match. I'll have to look back. I don't think I have a match this highly rated.
You have Hogan Race, 4 stars from last week.
Yeah. Okay. Well, there you go. Until that one. No.
And Hogan Andre at 3.
Hogan Andre at 3. No, he wasn't 4 stars. No, I'm talking about
you
here
have
at
it
the
as
guard,
4 stars. You have it as 4 stars.
Did I have the 4 stars? No. Yeah. I'm talking about in the building. I'm talking about here at the guard. Not.
Oh,
here.
Okay. All right.
These are different.
Well, last week. There you go. Last week.
Well, last week. There you go. Before that.
Yeah. Before that. Yeah. I think you might be right.
Before that, though. But yeah, Hogan Harley was fantastic. But obviously, the best matches we've seen in these 2.5 years have included either Hogan or Savage. The ones that at least are 3 to 3.5.
You had Tito Valentine. There are 2 matches of 4 way back.
And that was what? 5. Yeah.
Early,
so there you go.
85, yeah.
Yeah. So we're talking about, not often do we get a match this intense psychology wise in a MSG house show. So kudos to Steamboat for going out there and forcing Honky to have to kind of get the thing going, and Honky went with it to one of the best matches we've seen this year. I mean, when we talk about, you know, when we do our end of year JR, this might be a match that might be in top 3. So, but with the count out, Honky Tonk Man retains his Intercontinental Championship. Even
I haven't really rewatched any of this MSG stuff, but now you're gonna be thinking I got to rewatch this one because I don't know, maybe I was a little bit low on it. I guess I am a little bit low. We'll see. Anyway, I have to rethink my life. 2018.
Now, one thing though, I thought was interesting was the y'all's talking point about Steamboat. It seems like a hotter character chasing. And if you look at his history, you know, he was like 8 times World Tag Team Champion. He was 5 times Mid-Atlantic Tag Team Champion. He was a TV title 4 times, U.S. Champion 4 times. You know, the World Heavyweight Title once, and then 2 Mid-Atlantic titles. Meaning that the promoters liked him chasing a lot too, but the key to keeping him as a draw was he had to win, get a cup of coffee, maybe a 3 or 4 month run, drop it, and then go into a new program. But the key was that he was always crucial on getting the win, and here he wasn't going to get that win against Honky, and it almost like kills him as a draw and as a character almost in the WWF after this feud, really.
Mm-hmm.
No, I agree.
Because you look at it, I mean, everyone would be hot in 1988 for that when that WrestleMania 4 was hoping for a Savage Steamboat draw rematch, and that match didn't happen. And his return there was, I mean, then again, everybody was a cold show. Period. So I mean, I don't know if I can even blame that.
But you know what?
There was,
too,
like, no reaction. Steamboat's return either.
I might save the thoughts for WrestleMania 4 when we get there, but I actually believe they made the right move in not having that rematch. And I know looking back in a vacuum we're thinking, oh, it'd be great to have the rematch, but I actually think it would have hurt Savage more than it helped him. But we can cover that when we get there.
I'm with you on that, tell you the truth. Yeah. Maybe, there's no reason for it to have a babyface match.
Right, and I think it would have split Savage's pop maybe and all that, so I don't think it was necessary in that night. They're better off just sticking to the plan and letting him mow through heels. All right, Scott, why don't we take a break? This is an energetic first half, a lot going on. Surprising little gem here between Honky Tonk and Steamboat. We got a lot more to come. Why don't we go ahead and take a listen to our break, and we'll be back right after this.
Sometimes I think it's a shame when I get feeling better when I'm feeling no pain. I can picture every move that a man could make.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the pro wrestling only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back, after all. he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Nations, JT Rizzero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com, and we offer those to you on three great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the original Place to Be podcast, as well as Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, as well as the Our Vantage Point podcast and Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver quick-hit pod blasts on topics old and new.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Psychology is Dead, Puro Potpourri, Stacy and Elliot's Bogus Journey, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Letters from Center Stage, Space City, an NWA Classics On Demand adventure, Through the Years, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, and much more. And on our popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, Go Home in a Box, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, Geek and Sassy, and Imaginary Stories podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows plus others available on PlacementNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlacementNation.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlacementNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Hey, this is Ed Banger Thrasher, and you're listening to Where, what the fuck is it? The Place to Be podcast, or you better not miss it because I'm on it.
All right, Nation, we are back taking a look at the July 1987 Madison Square Garden House Show. Myself, Scott, and Sheriff Pete. And one thing you can promise here on the Place to Be podcast is you'll never be alone when you're with our fans and friends and family. And definitely when we go to live events. We'll be doing that, of course, in a few weeks when we head to the Royal Rumble. If you are going to be in Philadelphia that weekend, be sure to let us know. And you can join us on Saturday for a PTBN pregame meetup, or even maybe somewhere along the way Sunday we can shake hands and say hi if we haven't yet. So be sure to just reach out to me on social media somewhere along the way, and we'll go ahead and get you linked up with the group. And, of course, as well, if you're going to New Orleans in April, Pete will be there, right? Not for media, but you'll be in town, right?
Yeah, I'll be in there. I'll be in town. Yeah, I'm not going to Mania, but I'm going to meet you guys up for the pub crawl and stuff.
There you go. So Sheriff Pete will be patrolling New Orleans. Can't wait. I'll be there, me, Roger, and D'Amato driving down from New England. So it'll be an interesting road trip.
Yeah, boys.
Of course. Can't wait.
Fucking Smokey and the Bandit here.
Making towns. All right. So as I said, you'll never be alone. And who else is never alone is Bret Hart, because he's always cheating on his wife with some woman. But also, speaking of alone and Hart, that is a song playing underneath us here tonight. The number one song in the nation this week. Tease up Scott Criscolo's Pop Culture Corner. How's that for a fucking segue?
And that was, again, and you only gave yourself like 10 seconds. But thank you, JR. That's right. Thank you, JR. It is our pop culture report. And as you hear, Heart with Alone is your number one song in the country. As this is a Saturday house show. So the new billboard came out today, the 25th. And that is your number one. One of a few great 80s power ballad hits that wasn't really a power ballad. It was a little faster than that. But still one of their power hits. And number two, from the movie Beverly Hills Cop 2, Shakedown by Bob Seger, which is actually a really great song. Number three, JR's favorite band, U2, with Still Haven't Found What I'm Looking For, as the Joshua Tree continues to own the album charts.
I haven't found what I'm looking for either, and that's the disappearance of U2.
At number four, our girl Whitney Houston, I Want to Dance with Somebody. I want to dance with Sheriff Pete. At number five, also from Beverly Hills Cop 2, but I don't remember it being in Beverly Hills Cop 2, but it is George Michael with I Want Your Sex. Of course, from the album Faith, which was one of the big albums in 1987 and 88. At number six, Rhythm's Gonna Get You. Rhythm's Gonna Get You, Pete. Doo-doo-doo-doo. Gloria Estefan, the Miami Sound Machine. Number seven, Something So Strong by Crowded House.
Let me interrupt you here, Scott.
Yes.
I Want Your Sex is in the strip club scene.
Oh, okay. I didn't really... No, it makes sense. I don't remember it being actually on the soundtrack. I mean, I kind of remember it being in the movie, but I don't remember it being on the soundtrack because that's their, according to Billboard's website, that it was part of From Beverly Hills Cop 2 instead of being from Faith. That's why I got confused. I knew it was in the movie, like in the background, but I didn't realize they were treating it like a soundtrack cut. But
eating up facials, I Want Your Sex. What kind of night is this, New Year's Eve? I'm about to call you Porno Pete instead of Sheriff Pete.
Porno Pete. Or Peg Leg. At number seven, Something So Strong by Crowded House. Number eight, one of my favorite one-hit wonders of the 80s, Little Tapao with Heart and Soul, which is actually a really good song. Number nine, Don't Disturb This Groove by The System. And at number 10, another JR favorite, Exposé with Point of No Return. There you go. There's your top 10 that came out that day, that Saturday the 25th, with your number one song being Alone by Heart. Let's take a look at what's going on in the movies. Only two movies came out that day, that Friday before the 24th. However, two actually very well-known movies of the late 80s. The first one made $11,227,824, and it probably proved that this movie series needed to end with this one. It is JR.
Star Wars.
No. No, yeah, $11 million. They make that in like half a day.
They made that off you.
Even back then. Superman 4, The Quest for Peace.
The Quest for Pete?
The Quest for Pete.
that's a New Orleans, oh, New Orleans 34.
On that stinkoid one.
That's what's going to be in a New Orleans, Pete. WrestleMania 34, The Quest for Pete. We're going to be trying to find you on Bourbon Street. Superman saves a spaceship of cosmonauts whose ship was thrown off course by debris, then visits his hometown of Smallville as Clark. Now his adoptive parents have died. Clark has inherited their now unattended farm. In an empty barn, he uncovers a capsule that brought him to Earth and removes a luminescent green Kryptonian energy module. A recording left by his mother, Lara, states that its power can only be used once. Unwilling to sell the farm to a mall developer, Superman returns to Metropolis, where he stops a runaway subway train after the conductor collapses at the controls. Now, I don't know what any of that means, but I think it did pretty well of nailing everything pronunciation-wise. Starring, of course, Christopher Reeve, Gene Hackman, Jackie Cooper, John Cryer, Mariel Hemingway, Stanley Labour, Don Fellows, and on and on. Mark Pillow.
Yeah, and this movie, obviously, as Pete stated, did not do as well as 1, 2, or 3. So we did not get another Superman movie until for the next 9 years. I'm sorry, 19 years.
Is that the mess with Brandon Routh?
The mess with Brandon Routh, yes. Superman Returns in 2006. All right, but the number one movie of the weekend.
Trying to earn my way into that comics chat that Tim Cable teases me about. I'm learning.
Brandon Routh, of course, now on Legends of Tomorrow.
Yeah, I knew that. Yeah, definitely. He's great on Legends of Tomorrow, whatever. Yes, he's great on that
movie. There you go. You're awesome. There you go. Yeah. Rolled right in. Threw you a softball and you hit a double. Yeah. All right. The number one movie
of the
weekend
on the
made $54.2 million, a biopic, which also had a great soundtrack, La Bamba.
Yes, La Bamba, about that superhero from Puerto Rico.
He was Mexican.
Richard Steven Valenzuela is a normal teenage boy who becomes a rock and roll superstar under the stage name Richie Valens. He meets and falls in love with his fellow high school student, Donna Ludwig, for whom he wrote a song that became a number two hit, Donna. However, Donna's father is shown as having issues with his daughter dating a Mexican-American, as I said, which causes friction between Richie and Donna. The movie also has several subplots, such as his relationship with his mother, Connie Valenzuela, and his half-brother, Bob Morales, and the jealousy that Bob felt toward Richie's success. Starring Lou Diamond Phillips, Rosanna DeSoto, Elizabeth Pena, Rick Dees, Howard Hunsberry, Brian Setzer and his orchestra, and many others.
There you go.
I know what song we're closing with. We're so closing with La Bamba tonight.
Do you remember who sang it, JR?
Richie Valens.
Well, that was the original. Do you know who sang the song on the soundtrack?
La 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 Bamba. Los Lobos.
Correct.
I just saw it on Wikipedia.
Oh, okay. I had a feeling. And of course, the great Isai Morales played his brother. So there you go, La Bamba. Isai Morales. All right, so there you go. There were your big movies for the weekend. And finally, it's all we got after that is our chick look at baseball. The 1987 baseball season. We are in the middle of the heat of summer. Of course, being a Saturday, all teams in action. Pete, you're a White Sox fan, correct?
Negative Dodger fan.
Oh. Can anybody root for a team that they're in the fucking
city? Oh, you're one to fucking talk. You're fans all over the place. Fucking Lakers, Cowboys.
Yeah, my dad grew up in Brooklyn, so I'm a Dodger fan.
Listen to this asshole chastising people liking teams from away from his area.
This is baseball. We're not talking about any of the sports, okay? All right? Asshole. Did you know La Bamba? Did you know Los Lobos without looking?
No, I said I looked.
Did you know who Brandon Routh is?
Didn't Los Lobos do the Macarena?
No.
Was that the Los Lonely Boys?
Whatever. No. Macarena was whatever that fucking guy's name was. Anyway.
Here we go.
Right, the Yankees.
What did the Los Lonely Boys do? They did a popular song, didn't they?
They did. They did do a popular song. I don't remember what it was, though. No, the Macarena was, I don't remember what those two assholes' names were.
Heaven?
Anyway.
Is that the name of the song?
Those lonely boys. I don't know.
Pete, anything?
Nothing.
Heaven. Nothing. Let's see. I think
Heaven was, it was Brian Adams.
No, they did Heaven too. Ready? Listen. Well, hopefully you'll see no ad. I knew it.
Jeez.
Yeah, there you go. Question me.
Great. This entire show, a case study of Latino music. All right. Anyway.
Get that blood flowing, that hot Latino blood.
Hot Latino blood. Well, we'll have some hot Latino blood later in the show. All right. We're going to play this in the background when I get the scores.
if you're talking about the Mets, yes, for sure. Those Only Boys makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Speaking of the White Sox, they beat the Yankees at Comiskey on this day by the score of 3-2. The Dodgers beat the Cubs in L.A. by the score of 7-2. And the Mets lost at Shea 7-5 to the Astros. Your standings at this moment in the AL East, the Yankees back in first place by a game over the Tigers, 1.5 over the Blue Jays, 8.5 over the Brewers. In the AL West, the Twins led the AL West by 2 games over Oakland, and 3.5 over California. In the NL East, the Cardinals led the East by 7.5 over the Expos, 9 over the Mets, 11 over the Cubs. And finally, the NL West, it is the Reds in first place by 2.5 over the Giants. And that is it for your pop culture report.
All right, I got two trivia questions for you guys. We'll see who gets either one right. You ready? Yeah. Los Lonely Boys, the Garza Trio, the three guys in the group. Can you name the three of them? And take a guess what year that song came out.
I have no idea what their names are. Are you kidding? That song came out in
1993.
I'll say more like 99.
So the names are Henry, JoJo, and Ringo. This is fucking fantastic. Like, all right, let's take Boz Scaggs' song plus one of the Beatles and then Henry Mancini. How about that?
Henry Mancini.
And the year 2004, the song came out.
Wow!
Yeah.
I didn't realize it was that new.
I know. It feels older, doesn't it? The genre is Chicano rock.
Chicano!
Of Great song.
Too bad we don't have Jesse on the show tonight. He would have said, here comes Tito and his Chiquino. Chiquino. His Chiquino Rock. He would have said Chiquino and would have been fine probably. But all right. Match Pop Culture Report. Let's get back to the guard.
Oh, Los Lonely Boys. All started out of a stupid comment, as always. All right, we go backstage with Gorilla Monsoon, who's with Ricky Steamboat, who's fired up and pissed off and wants to go back out to make a statement to the Honky Tonk Man and for all of Madison Square Garden. Honky cheated. He isn't a real champ. Real champs stand in and fight. Even Randy Savage did that. He's going to go out and issue another challenge to Honky in public, and he won't have time to back out. Gorilla then chats with Honky and Jimmy Hart, who calls Steamboat a crybaby. He says Honky didn't cry when Steamboat used jujitsu and karate. Honky says he's the champ and Steamboat isn't. He's beaten him twice, and a win is a win. Honky says all his NYC fans want him to be champ, and cheered him on tonight. Gorilla's in with Tito Santana, who talks about his athletic background and having tried football, but why he chose wrestling instead. Gorilla says Slick will not be at ringside tonight, and Tito says he has all positive thoughts as he heads to the ring. And Nikolai Volkov may be one of Russia's greatest athletes, but he's in for a hell of a fight. Any thoughts on these interviews, guys?
I thought Steamers was awesome. I mean, a lot of times people give him a lot of negativity on his microphone skills, but yeah. Man, I believed everything he said right there.
Yeah, he's fired up. It's a hidden little gem of a feud. It always just seems like we mentioned earlier, like he just lost to Honky and Superstars and that was it, you know? You kind of forget this actually edged on a bit here. And we might not even had it if Jake wasn't in traction or whatever with his neck. You know, so we kind of luck out getting this feud.
Yes, we actually do. One more thing about the interviews, JR, and I was actually saying this while I was watching it. It seems like during the interview intermission, Gorilla must have interviewed the Hart Foundation.
Yeah.
But something must have happened. Maybe like, you know, the tape snapped or it didn't record right or whatever, because they go back to the ringside.
Or Brett didn't have his glasses and he's having one of those bug eye moments that he talks about in his book.
Yes. But in any event, we go back to the ringside and Alfred is at the table and they just put up, you know, the graphic cap that says Madison Square Garden Present. And he goes through it's almost like he's narrating the interview.
Right.
And then they go to I think the interview with Tito, I think. So it was very strange. Like it looked like there was supposed to be an interview with the Hart Foundation there, but they didn't air it. So I don't know, you know, it was very strange. I don't know if like the tape snapped or, you know, again, Brett lost his glasses or Anvil was doing some blow. I don't know. But it turned out that they didn't do it. And Alfred did an unbelievably piss poor job of narrating the interview. So anyway, I just wanted to point that out. But the other interview, but Steamboat's was great. Honky's was actually really good, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And Tito. So. Let's get into the second half.
All right, back to the ring as Tito Santana does come out with that Chicano pride, taking on Nikolai Volkov. Interesting match here. Tito's kind of languishing a bit. You know, he hasn't done too much. He kind of had the stuff going on with Slick back at WrestleMania time. He had the, you know, he's involved in the Hart Foundation, Danny Davis stuff, but he hasn't really had his own thing to sink his teeth into, battling the very increasingly irrelevant Nikolai Volkov here. Nikolai comes out with the flag and sings to boos as usual. Tito gets a warm welcome as he jogs out.
Maybe later.
Freudian slip there. We get underway with some basic lockups. Tito shrugs off a right hand, unloads a few of his own. We get some stalling, and then Tito goes to the arm. Nikolai catches him with a sucker punch to the jaw and then hoists him up into a choke. Nikolai dumps him outside and keeps stomping away as Tito slides back in. Nikolai chokes away, but Tito comes back with punches to the gut until Nikolai cuts him off with a bear hug. Tito rides in pain but hangs on, eventually claps free. Nikolai keeps control with a club to the back and then goes to the bear hug. Nikolai releases and gets a terrible leaping clothesline for two. Just awful. Nikolai hoists Tito up into the gorilla press and drops him to a backbreaker for a near fall. Tito gets a burst of energy and lands a flying forearm for the win. The best thing I can say about this is it just existed. Tito can only do so much with this lumbering Russian. Nikolai's control segment's okay, but he's so plodding and sloppy out there. I did like the finish as Tito sneaks out the win after getting beaten on, but there's really no story or flow to this. Kind of a waste of Tito. I went one star just because of Tito on this one. Let's save the post-match stuff for after. Let's just talk about the match here, Scott.
I gave it a star. Your time was 8:21. It was evident that Nikolai needs a tag team partner. He's useless and uninspiring as a singles guy right now. Those days are over. So with obviously Sheiky Baby gone, as we talked about in the last show, he was just floating aimlessly, and this match is not good. Tito still feeling fired up, so he's still obviously a good fresh character, and he just needs he needs kind of something for himself. But at least Tito can handle himself in a single setting, whereas Nikolai is shy. I mean, they spent the match talking about the creases in Nikolai's fat head. I mean, come on, really, it's the best you could do. But yeah, I mean, just a pretty basic match, Pete. You know, he did the best he could, Tito. But I mean, Nikolai's just he needs something to do right now, particularly for a tag team, because no one wants to see him wrestle in singles matches anymore. And this proves it.
Sad when Boris Zukov is your lifeline.
I know, right?
Oh gosh, yeah, this was just boring as all get out. I mean, at least you have a good babyface in Tito selling all of Nikolai's weak-minded, weak-looking, phony-looking offense.
Ukraine's not weak.
but you know what? Tito's finisher looks so nasty. You can buy that as a knockout blow by anything. Like, you could believe it any time because it looks good. It looks legit. It looks painful. And it can come out of nowhere. So it's an actually great finisher. With that said, yeah, I give it a star also. Just, you know, yeah, it was what it was.
Good. Right. Short words. And some great Chiquino action there. Yes. So.
All right. So then after the match, Tito's kind of recovering and celebrating, and Ron Bass shows up and attacks him, whips him and chokes him with the bull whip in a really good, vicious beatdown. Outback Jack makes a save because he's Bass's opponent, and referee shows up. We roll right into the match. So, Scott, any quick thoughts on the brawl there? Pete, how about you?
Yeah, I'm with you. I thought the Bass beatdown at Tito is nice and a nice little piece of business because, what, they work next month there in the Garden, right? So it was a nice little angle to set up their match so they're not coming into the Garden cold.
Yeah.
It was awesome. Yeah, no, it was awesome. And they were – I mean, it was vicious. It was a good – I think a guy like Ron Bass who can give you a good, like, you know, NWA Mid-Atlantic kind of beatdown that Vince doesn't usually go too far on kind of helped things, particularly with Tito, because Tito is always a good sympathetic, you know, face, kind of like Steamboat to a certain extent. So it was pretty cool. Worked out.
All right. Next up, then, is that match between Ron Bass and old Outback Jack. A big Haas match. We finally get a legit test for Jack. Bass really upped his heel game his last two shows. Last month, he gets into it with Gorilla. Now, this attack here. And a smart way to start the match, too, to build some heat by using Tito, because Jack is just awful. Tito tries to get in the ring, but he gets carried off by officials as Bass jumps Jack to the floor and talks some shit to him. Jack returns and clubs away, but after a break, we have Bass back in control and hammering away. Al says Bass needs mental help as he's out of his mind. Bass keeps smacking Jack around, but Jack goes to the eyes and slugs away. Bass cuts him off with a kick to the gut, and Jack reverses a whip to the corner and slams Bass. Jack goes to the middle rope and whiffs on an ugly back elbow drop. Bass finishes him with the face buster. Looks like the Jack push is dead now after it's they tried, but it's over. Bass is heating up, though, and looks good overall, both during the beating and even in the match, too. Jack's awful, though. He stumbles through all his moves and has two left feet. Just nothing. He's got a little bit of charisma, but just nothing to back it up in the ring. So I went a half star on this, Pete, mainly all because of Bass.
Yeah, I went with a dud. I thought that was terrible. I mean, Outback Jack comes out for the save and then gets squashed. I mean, it's terrible. I mean, assuming that was this is even. I don't know. I don't know. I mean, it felt like it was like a goodbye, Outback Jack. Like we don't want to see you gone again. Your bags are out of the car. Get the hell out of my building. I mean, that's how it felt like. Like
right.
This felt like the death knell to the character.
And then sadly, I think he's around for like at least 6 more months. I think he's around at 88. So,
jeez, yeah, well,
but his push is clearly
on the wall,
dead,
Jack.
Yeah, his push is clearly dead in
there's
the water.
There's no sequel to Bill Dundee here.
No, no. What do you think, Scott?
Your runtime around 6 minutes. Our man, Mr. Cawthon, did not have an exact time, but they said around 6 minutes, which is probably about 5.5 too long. I gave this match a dud. Outback Jack is atrocious. Ron Bass did the best he could, but as I've said every time we've talked about it, Outback Jack did not belong in professional wrestling. The guy has no idea what he's doing. It's an utter mess. And this showed it. There's really nothing more to say. Like you said, the you know, hunk of doo or stinky doo or whatever the hell he's from, he should be stinky dooing out the door, because it's he. I'd rather see more Hillbilly Jim than see any more of Outback Jack. And then they almost tried to tag. I was watching a couple of superstars, in between these shows, and actually they're trying to like be a tag team or whatever, and they're trying to work together on, you know, giving each other their own cultures. It was kind of stupid, but
kind of stupid. It sounds terrible.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, they cut a promo, you know, like a inset interview where Outback and Hillbilly Jim are like exchanging cuisines, like, but you know, eating, you know, cooked shit. So you know, whatever the hell it was. But anyway, yeah, JR, Outback Jack is cooked. He's got nothing left, and it's evident that experiment as a hunky doo or humpy door or whatever the hell it is done. Ron Bass is much more important as a heel. We saw it with the Tito beatdown, and of course with this match that just goes away quickly. So I gave it a dud. It was not good at all. Terrible.
Double door.
Double dud.
Ricky Steamboat hits the ring, talks about how great WrestleMania 3 was, but it's a different – sorry, WrestleMania the 3rd or whatever the fuck he always says. WrestleMania number 3 was, yeah. But it's a different story now. When he left the house, he told his two-week-old son he would come back with the title, and a man has to stay in the ring, but Honky got counted out on purpose so he could stay champ, and everyone saw it. Steamboat has pulled the strings, and next time at MSG, him and Honky will face off in a lumberjack match, and that will keep him in the ring. Mm-hmm. That brings us to our next match, as the Dream Team finally explodes. Brutus Beefcake taking on Greg the Hammer Valentine in a singles match. Beefcake looks for revenge for his longtime partner. Hammer's out with Johnny V, who still has his fucked up haircut. Beefcake gets a big pop as he struts out, scissors in hand. We get lots of stalling here as Gorilla talks shit on V. Beefcake's looking pretty ripped. He's a new shredded up tights as well. Beefcake cracks Valentine and Hammer's, I'm sorry, V's and Hammer's heads together and then batters the Hammer side to side until things get started. Beefer spikes him to the mat, scoops him up, and slams him hard. Gorilla says Hammer's a slow starter and likes getting beaten on as Beefer struts around. Beefcake dodges a charge and keeps laying in some hard shots to the head as you see the Rosati sisters in the crowd. The fans roar for Beefcake as Hammer tries to escape but ends up getting crotched on the ring post. Beefer stomps away and gets an atomic drop for two, but continuing to work the midsection and going for pin covers. Beefcake takes a moment to look to the crowd, and Hammer takes advantage, slings him into the post, and goes right to work. V chokes away and punches from the floor, and Hammer keeps clobbering away back inside. Hammer grabs a chin lock and yanks it back on it until Beefer eventually powers up to his feet, and Hammer knees him in the back. Hammer focuses on the back, but Beefcake backdrops out of a pile driver attempt. Both men are up and trading blows, but Hammer goes to the gut and cuts him down, and then zeroes in on the abs and back some more. Gorilla shits on the ref here and says he's very excited that Mr. T will be the enforcer soon, as he'll clean all this stuff up. Hammer starts to work the leg and hooks in the figure four. Beefcake rides in pain but hangs on as the crowd's rallying him, and he gets to the ropes to force the break. Hammer chops away and shoves Beefer down again and goes to the figure four, but Beefcake kicks him into the buckle. Hammer takes him down and pummels on him to the mat, and Beefer turns the tide and starts to unload some strikes. Beefcake blocks a suplex and reverses to one of his own, and the two trade blows again, and Beefcake grabs a sleeper to a big pop. Johnny V comes in, and Beefcake releases the hold to grab him as well. Gorilla wants a DQ, and we finally get one when Dino Bravo shows up and clobbers Beefcake. The Dream Team batter the crap out of Brutus and grab the scissors to cut some of Beefer's hair. The Bulldogs eventually come in and make the save, and all three faces clean house. A really solid match with strong crowd heat and nice chemistry. It was a good showing by Beefcake as a singles act, and he really held up his end of the bargain. Hammer was great as always, and I like the finish given the story between these guys. Good solid work. 3 stars again here tonight. I thought it was a really impressive showing by Beefcake Scott. And also shout out to Chad Campbell, who's Georgia Bulldogs, headed to the NCAA College Football Championship game over defeating Oklahoma in a shootout. So there you go.
Yes, Nick, the other one. Is this Sony Michelle or is that the other guy? Anyway, Georgia scored 54-48, your final, and they will take on either Alabama or Clemson. Yeah, I gave this match 3 stars. It was a strange – I'm not sure what about the match I liked. Your total runtime, 13-11. I almost say it was kind of like let me think. It's a lot like a teacher finally giving the student his final exam after all this time of you know, working with him in the Dream Team and teaming with him and helping him and working on him. He actually gets his moment as a singles guy, and kind of Valentine gives him the final exam. I thought this match was really good. I thought it was paced well. I thought Valentine was very deliberate in his attacks. And I think Beefcake has really advanced as a singles guy. And having, you know, Johnny V there. And I'm trying to think the last time Johnny V was actually at the Garden for two matches, let alone one. But I, you know, I can't believe he was actually here for two matches. And he's another one that I feel like, I mean, we've got a lot of great managers, obviously, Bobby, Fuji, you know, Jimmy, and
Fuji was your number two, huh?
I know you like that. I was just listing guys. I wasn't really ranking, but I would have put Fuji number one, but JR might have jumped out the window. But I feel like Luscious John, who used to be one of my favorites, even he here looks kind of out of sorts, like he doesn't belong. Like he's kind of dated, but I don't know. The match was really good. Dino Bravo comes out and is, you know, cool slacks as he's, you know, ordering cartons of Parliament from his, you know, Montreal, quote, associates. And he doesn't even look like he could fit in those either. It's like squeezing into him. But the match was really good. I thought it was paced well. I thought Valentine did a good job kind of hammering it no pun intended, at Beefcake, and Beefcake with some great comebacks, and really paced well for them. And I think Beefcake's ready for the big time. Valentine should be back to being a singles guy now. He had his, you know, run of being a tag guy for what? At this point, it was, Jesus, close to 2 years, I would say. After pretty much, because he lost the IC title in July of 85, and then by the end of August, I think he's in the Dream Team. So after being a tag guy for almost 2 years, I think, you know, he's probably ready to get back into the singles world. So, but a great match. Well done. Another great effort by a good, experienced guy, and then you know, a guy who's kind of learning his way here in the WWF and looked pretty good here as well. So great match.
Well, three stars. I watched a completely different match because I thought this match sucked. I gave it a star and a quarter. I liked Valentine's offense. I was very credible, but I thought Beefcake was terrible working underneath. I thought.
Wait, what did you give this?
A star and a quarter.
Oh,
I,
wow.
I hated it.
So you like Dino Bravo and Brady Boone better?
Yeah, I thought Boone that was at least exciting, and I might have been like at least in a good mood to start the episode. Now I've got into the thing, and this was just the shits. Beefcake was just terrible underneath. His selling was just god awful, and then when he's on offense, it looked like it couldn't hurt a flea. It was just the shits. Johnny V gets involved, and that was terrible. Yeah, I thought this was boring, plotting, and this is like the worst of Valentine and the worst of the Beefcake. And I'm a guy, as a kid, I like Beefcake, but I've come to the conclusion he's a terrible wrestler, and there's not many good matches of him. And God bless you guys for thinking this one was, but this was another just Beefcake fart in the church.
Wow, see, I thought he was all right in this one. House. Yeah, I thought he was all right in this one. All right.
Hated it.
Surprised.
I mean, I'm not, but I may have surprised I liked it. Yeah. I mean, Valentine is, I don't know. Maybe I got to rewatch this whole show. Valentine. I'm all off on everything.
And I love Valentine.
Yeah. I didn't mind Beefcake as much here. I don't know. We'll see how he develops, I guess. But I know he gets shaky, obviously. But I thought he actually represented okay here. And I didn't mind the finish. All right. Interesting takes. Time now for a very big debut here in MSG as Richard Irwin Rude, born December 7th, 1958 in St. Peter, Minnesota, attended the infamous Robbinsdale High School with Tom Zenk, Brady Boone, Nikita Koloff, Kurt Hennig, John Nord, Barry Darso, and on and on. Very close childhood friends with Kurt Hennig after graduating from community college with a degree in phys ed, trained as a wrestler under Eddie Sharkey, began wrestling in 1982 as Ricky Rude, a babyface, lost his TV debut in Mid-Atlantic, then he headed to Georgia, to Continental, Jim Crockett, back to Memphis in 84 as Ravishing Rick Rude, the overconfident heel, managed by Jimmy Hart, feuded with Jerry Lawler and King Kong Bundy, was hired to Florida in December of 84, defeated Pez Whatley there for the title. Eventually, after a lot of success there, went to World Class with Percy Pringle, feuded with Kevin Von Erich and Chris Adams, captured the NWA American Heavyweight title on November 4th, 1985. After World Class withdrew from the NWA and changed his name, NWA American Championship was renamed the WCWA World title while Rude was still champion. After losing the title to Chris Adams, he fired Pringle and replaced him with his sister Raven. What about me? Ended up back in Jim Crockett, of course, as a great team with Manny Fernandez and the manager Paul Jones. They were known as the Awesome Twosome, won the NWA Tag Team titles on December 6th, 86 from the Rock and Roll Express. The feud ended when Rude left in April of 87 to join the WWF. Crockett aired a pre-taped non-title match. The Express defeated Rude and Fernandez to claim that Rude had been injured as a result. Of course, he makes his MSG debut here after hitting the WWF. Pete, any thoughts on pre-WWF Rick Rude?
He was actually one of the most fascinating wrestlers when you watch him on tape from where he was really just crappy. And but he always had like that rude swarminess to him. And you got to see him progress and actually become a great promo. He used to be a mediocre promo, but he got his personality over. It's funny because the Rude Awakening originally was the DDT. And then it became morphed into what it was now, what it is in the WWF, which is the neck break, spinning neck breaker. But yeah, the guy, he's actually a guy, if you go out and actually actively watch his whole career, you can see him slowly, gradually improving from a guy who had two left feet to then became a passable worker. He had the personality. Then he starts learning through going through the territory system, getting to become a better and better promo. And then when he finally gets to the WWF, right after Crockett, he still didn't have the offense in Crockett, but he was a great bumper. That's why they put him with Manny, because Manny was a great offensive worker. And then he had Rude, who could bump and carry and do the personality part of the team. And then when he finally gets to the WWE, it's kind of like the light bulb clicks on, and he becomes swarmy. He gets his cadence down. He gets his promo shtick down, and he gets his kind of like psychology, which I think working with like Ricky Steam, beginning to feud early in there with Ricky Steamboat, and then moving on to Jake Roberts, getting to work with some guys with really good psychology. Helped develop him, and then finally when he got to WCW, he was the total finished package where he was good offense. But even then, if you watch enough of his matches there, you kind of see where sometimes he still had a hole in his offense where he went to wrestle sometimes too much. But because his personality is so big and larger than life, he could do that because his personality could carry a rest hold. Really interesting guy to watch. From his timeline perspective, from the beginning to end.
There you go. Defy you to find a better Rick Rude explanation than Pete just delivered right there. That's why Pro Wrestling Only, a place to be nation. Best podcast feeds going today. Thanks, Pete. Big MSG debut, Rick Rude taking on old Jerry Allen, the New Haven scrub. And Rick Rude had made his debut on June 7th, by the way, 1987, in Sacramento, defeated Jose Estrada. Rude solo here tonight, but Gorilla notes that he is associated with Bobby Heenan. Al gushes over Rude's physique as Gorilla and Al talk about Rude's set resemblance to Tom Selleck. Rude slowly disrobes and preens for a bit as the crowd for the crowd before finally locking up. Allen catches Rude off guard with a right hand that knocks him to the floor. Rude returns and hammers away, but Allen gets a sunset flip for two and then works the arm for a moment. Allen tries a high cross body, but Rude catches him and drops him with a backbreaker and then poses. Rude hits a fist drop off the top and covers, but he gets up before three and talks some shit to the crowd. Rude hoists Allen up and slugs away, but then goes to the trap hold as we get more talk about Sherry knocking off Moolah. Rude takes Allen over with a pair of snap suplexes as he's just taking his time wrecking this dude now. Allen blocks a third suplex and gets one of his own, but Rude recovers with a great standing dropkick. Allen dodges a second dropkick and punches away, but then mares Rude across the ring and gets a dropkick of his own. Allen takes Rude out with a monkey flip and then unloads, but Rude blocks a second monkey flip with an inverted atomic drop and finishes him with a hanging backbreaker. Fun little match. Rude was dominant and showed off his full arsenal while also getting over his character. Allen was game, got some good hope spots into keeping this from becoming boring or just a squash, and Rude immediately looks like a star. I went one star despite this being a squash. I really enjoyed this one, Pete.
I went a half star. It still felt a little bit Rest Hold City for me. Even though they were game and Rude, you can see the pieces already coming together on how he could become a player in the WWF. And I've always liked Jerry Allen. I remember him having a really good match with Randy Savage in Memphis. But it was like a match just to get Rude over. So, I mean, it did its purpose. It wasn't about doing a 50-50 match. It was about making Rude look awesome. And I thought they did a good job with that.
What do you think, Scott?
Yeah, I gave this a star as well. Your match time, 7:12. And first off, at least my scrub jobber from my town is still employed, unlike the pride of Providence, Sal G, who's been gone for 2 years. So don't be jacking my scrub. At least he's getting paid still.
He sucks.
But any event, you suck.
Imagine what is up with this show? Fucking Pete's shipping for friggin' whatever the fuck his name is, Brady Boone, and Scott's in fucking love with Jerry Allen. All these scrubs. Shitting
you
the good
started
matches.
It.
He's a scrub.
The New Haven scrub, Jerry. He's a jobber. What'd you want him to be? Hulk Hogan. It's like poor D'Amato and AJ or what's his name?
He's a
Cole
New Haven
Mello there.
Scrub.
Sal G is the pride of Providence, but by the late 80s, you know, he probably got shot because no one wanted to walk through Providence in the late 80s. Anyway.
I wouldn't walk through New Haven now, so.
I would, yeah. I would say that Rick Rude, like you said, JR, walking through the door, Rick Rude is the man. He's one of those guys that just, he's like Savage, instantly screams superstar. Carried himself like one. The tights were awesome. Already had the robe, already had the whole, I mean, he personifies that, the whole sweat hog gimmick, which will, you know, he cleans up and makes a little more streamlined as time moves on. The only move I never liked him doing, cause it always looks so cumbersome, is when he does the fist drop off the top rope. Cause he lands on his feet and it looks so weak. He should be like Lawler's and do it on, and, you know, land on his knees. Because it always looks so cumbersome when he tries to do it from the top rope and land on his feet. But that's the only thing about his arsenal I never liked. But otherwise, he's very smooth. And here was a guy that Vince just screamed to have on the mid-card roster. And this is a jobber match just to get him over with the crowd and kind of get MSG acclimated to him. Because this is definitely a guy, unless you were reading PWI and watching the other territories, you know, most diehard WWF fans wouldn't even know who he is. So this was a good opportunity to get him on TV and get put over by one of the scrubs. And it worked out well. And it's just the beginning for him. And I did – those are like my favorite – I'm curious, before the airbrush era, which we don't get for at least another year, what his, you know, tights ensemble is. But these were some of my favorite tights that he had, the diagonal stripes. I thought those were cool. Enjoyable match. I liked it. I liked it for a squash and a good way to get Rude over.
All right, indeed.
So there we go.
All right, Fink comes out and announces that the curfew has been waived for tonight's main event or final match of the evening and runs down the card for next month as well. And that brings us yet again to the British Bulldogs challenging the Hart Foundation for the tag team titles, looking for another shot at regaining their gold, more revenge. The Harts have dominated the belt since winning them and continue to improve week to week, building the heat along the way. The Harts have Jimmy with them, but no Davis this month, no Danny Davis. And the Bulldogs have Matilda, as always, and she chases Jimmy right to the floor. Hart attacks Davey at the bell, and he and Anvil quick tag and batter him in the corner for a bit. Davey is able to cause the champs to collide and then tags Dynamite, who cleans house on both Harts. Davey comes back in and works over Brett, hooking a chin lock and grinding away. Davey gets a crucifix for two and then tags Dynamite, who keeps up the barrage. Gorilla says the Bulldogs look like the Bulldogs of old as they work over the champs with aggression. Anvil comes over and goes to the eyes, but Dynamite shrugs it. And tags Davey, who lands a shot to the ribs. The Bulldogs drop him with a double headbutt, and Davey gets a cradle suplex for two. Dynamite tags in and lands a headbutt, but Brett comes back and drills him with a hard right hand and tags the Anvil, who stomps away and pitches him outside, where Brett slings him into the guardrail. Brett shoves Dynamite back inside, and Anvil clubs away. Anvil puts Dynamite on his knee and tags Brett, who lands an elbow off the middle rope. Brett tries for a slam, but Dynamite collapses on him for two. Brett pops up and slams Dynamite down and tags Anvil, who lays in the boots. Dynamite cuts Anvil down with a headbutt and tries for the tag, but Brett tags in and cuts him off with the chancery. The Hearts try a double team, but Dynamite dodges a charge and finally makes the tag. Davey cleans house, grabbing a two count off a dive off the top, and then follows with a nice vertical suplex for two and loads up the power slam for another near fall as Brett barely got his foot on the ropes. Brett floats over and gets a sleeper, but Dynamite breaks that up with a headbutt. Davey hoists Brett up into a military press, but stumbles back and drops Brett across the top rope, crotch first. Davey tries to suplex Brett back in, but Anvil trips him, and Brett falls on top for the win. The Bulldogs beat up the champs and Jimmy after the match. Super fun tag match. Red hot crowd. Fluid action, as always, with these guys. As good as these bouts always are, though, I think it's time to shuffle the Bulldogs out and mix things up a bit. They've got a ton of shots at this. They get pinned cleanly pretty much here, so they got to be done for a while now. The Hearts continue to develop as workhorse heels, and the Bulldogs did indeed look better and crisper, thanks to Dynamite being more involved and maybe not as banged up as he had been. Great way to close out the show. I went 3.5 on this one, Scott.
Your match time, 10:26, crisp 10:26, actually. I gave this 3.5 as well. I really liked it. And like you said, JR, the thing I wanted to point out when I was at the beginning of the show, is this the first time really since the big turn early in the year that the Hart Foundation did not have Danny Davis? And as we've said, Danny Davis was a heat magnet.
Yeah.
But Danny was in that hot main event in Baltimore with George Animal Steel, so he had to get paid for that. He had to go to the pay window. But, I mean, it's the Hart Foundation. They're the tag champs. They're great heels. They could have a match without Danny Davis. But it was interesting that this is the first time in a while he wasn't there. I definitely think that the Dynamite back in the flow has helped this match big time. No knock on Davey, but I mean, you gotta takes two to tango. Brett and Anvil have this great symmetry right now that I can tell you that I think you didn't see a year ago, and we constantly go back to this point, JR, about how in like mid to late 86 they seemed like they were kind of treading water and acting a little, you know, kind of out of it, but now I think they're in perfect symmetry as a heel team. They're great tag team champions, and this was a great match. Having said that, yes, it's time for the Bulldogs to move on. The tag division needs some, needs to get things going. And the problem here is, and we talked about it on the last show, you just turn the Islanders heel. So right now there really isn't – I think this is why they stuck with the Bulldogs. There really isn't a huge – babyface contender right now.
No.
The Bees?
No, there isn't. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, so.
They mentioned the Young Stallions on it.
Yeah, I mean, they're building them up a bit, but they're not going to draw much at this point. They're just getting started. No, you're right. I mean, besides the Bulldogs, it's not really a top-level team with the Can-Ams busted up.
Yeah, I think they were, it feels like they were slotted next, which makes Tom Zink's move even dumber.
Yeah, but they still have the Islanders feud to get through, so. Something had to fill this gap here, right? Maybe that was going to be the Stallions or the Bees, I guess, just for a couple months. I guess we'll see. But
I think it is the Bees.
Yeah.
I mean, they put good matches on. I mean, we watched a few, JR, here. Even in 86 when Brett and Anvil were not – even they still had good matches with the Bees in 86. So I think a match with them now would be fantastic. So that might have been what the fill was.
The Hart Foundation with me and the Bees – they're the weirdest, where I've seen them have really good matches with the Bees, and then I've had them see them have just some stinkers with the Bees. It's just a weird. It's not consistent.
And I think the Bees were the problem, Pete, because I've seen – I mean, JR and I have watched plenty of Bees matches. We've seen some good Bees matches, and we've seen some kind of Nick Bees matches, and I think it's them at times more than even their opponents. But anyway, Pete, I gave it 3 stars. I thought it was a great end of the show, and the Hearts are still your champions.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I went 2 3/4. I really enjoyed the Hart Foundation. I thought they bumped, especially Brett, bumping well for the Bulldogs, especially for Dynamite. I thought they had good heat on Dynamite. And I thought the way they the finish was a fun tag, crowd-pleasing way in that it didn't bury the Bulldogs, but it leaves them happy where they're embarrassing Jimmy Hart post-match, and at least the crowd's still happy, even though their team didn't win the belts. I felt that was a fun way to end the show as opposed to just beating them outright. So they try to kind of get their shine back. I just wish it would have gone a little longer. And we could have got some little longer heats and some longer shines and stuff. I just felt like they, well, they could have cut a lot of these other matches' times down and given this thing 15 or 16 minutes.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with that. They could have went a little quick, a little longer. At least they did the curfew thing. That was cool.
Yeah. That was cool.
All right, so there's the show. Why don't we get to our awards here for the evening, as we do each and every week. And we also, of course, always start with the match of the night. A lot of options here tonight across the board. I went with Bulldog's Hearts are Mine. I went 3.5 on that. It was a touch lower on the rest. I think I know where you guys are going, though.
Yeah. I'm definitely going with Honky and Steamboat.
Yeah, I'm going to follow my man Scott's lead on that one.
Okay. Yeah, it was fantastic.
All right. Okay, just marking this down. All right, worst match of the night, Scott. What do you have? The cousin junior, as it were.
Yes, I got. I had two duds, but I'll take the worst of the two duds, and I'm taking the opener. Dino Bravo looked fucking brutal, absolutely brutal. At least, I mean, Outback Jack, we knew going in sucked, and he was being de-pushed. Whereas Dino obviously is a guy that's high on their list creatively, and he's terrible.
Yeah.
So, and that match was just the shits. So I go to with Dino and Brady Boone.
I did too.
You know, they constantly try to push Dino all the way to like 89, and it just failed every time. Every time. I went with Bass and Outback Jack as worst match.
All right, I went with Bravo and Boone. So. Mark, this is like the opposite of last week, where I think we agreed with Kelly on everything, and Pete, you're against all this stuff here. Jack versus Ben.
Tells you how different this show was and how much variety there is and all the different quality.
Right. The last episode was like all pretty much clear cut. All right. Let's go now to our Hogan Award, our MVP of the night. I went with Honky Tonk Man here. I thought he was the best on the evening. I thought he carried Steamboat a bit in that match. I thought Steamboat was great, but it was Honky dictating the storyline. I thought his promo was great. Steamboat was great, too. Like, I wouldn't bitch if we gave it a split, but I'm going with Honky here. I thought he was well-deserved on this night for everything he brought to the table.
I'm going opposite. I'm going Steamer. I thought he was better in the match. I thought it was his offense that really carried it, because if he didn't have the variety of offense that he had, he could have gotten pretty boring seeing somebody else work on top for that long. And his promos, both of them, were knockout great. Talking people into the building for next time.
What do you, Scott?
This is tough. It's one of those two guys, but there's different reasons for both. I agree with you 100%, Pete, that Steamer was the man. And more for the promos even than the in-ring, because the in-ring you're going to get all the time out of him anyway. It's never a surprise.
I'm all right calling a tie here if you want, Scott. We can call it a tie. They both worked their asses off.
Yeah, I gotta, because I agree with you though, JR. Honky embraced it and rolled with it.
Yeah,
and it didn't seem like Steamboat had to carry him. So, I gotta go.
If Honky gets this will be the only time Honky Tonk is probably going to get this
for sure.
There's no doubt. Yeah, he'll never see this again.
So, yeah, I'll give it to both of them. They both earned it.
Yeah.
All right, the Uncle Elmer for the worst worker of the night. I thought this was clearly Dino Bravo on this evening.
Ugh, brutal. He's misshapen, fat, bloated.
And that's in a card of Outback. But Outback was short. Like, he didn't get much at all. Like, he just got the shit kicked out of him. So I thought Dino, for as much as he had to work in that match, was just, you know, exposed way more.
I'm going with Brother Brudeye.
Oh, Pete.
Wow. Cruel. No, I'm going with Dino. I can't, again, when you know going, see, the way I think about our awards sometimes, if you know going in something's bad, it's kind of hard to, unless it's really, really bad. We know going in Outback Jack is terrible, and he's not being booked as such. But for Dino Bravo to get this kind of stature on the card and then just look totally atrocious is not good. So no, he's definitely Uncle Elmer tonight, because obviously he's a guy they care about and a guy they want to see do well. Meanwhile, he's fucking terrible. So definitely Dino.
All right.
I mean, Brett found it insulting to have to put him over. So
yeah,
Brady Boone found it insulting too.
Yeah, everybody did. All right, best moment on this one. I went with Ron Bass attacking Tito after his match. I really liked that attack. I thought it set up next month well. And it added some nice heat to Bass's match, too, that would not have existed in any way otherwise.
Oh man, shit. That's a good move. I mean, I even said it when Green and I were watching it. I want to go with Steamer kicking out of the megaphone shot.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Because the place went fucking nuclear when that happened.
Yeah, that's mine.
Damn it. They're both good.
All right.
I gotta go with the megaphone shot. Only because I really do think I agree with you, JR. That brawl, that beatdown was fantastic. But it adds
a lot to their match for next month. I mean, because that would have been a cold match going into it.
For sure.
Yeah. No. I mean that beatdown was great, JR. But that, I mean, I said it earlier and I stick to it. I think if you were in that building that night after he kicked out of the megaphone shot, I thought Steve-O was winning the pullback. Yeah. So it was crazy. The crowd was off. It was ridiculous when that happened. So I got to go with that. But the beatdown was very good. And I, like we said, it helps us look ahead to next month.
All right. So finally, the Arcidi Award for the biggest juice head of the night. I went with Dino Bravo here. Do we all agree?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Okay. He didn't even look good as being juiced.
No,
he looked like Play-Doh. It was awesome.
All right, overall grade for this show out of 10. It's kind of an interesting one. Like, there's a lot of fun stuff. There's some not fun stuff. I feel like it's just the perfect middle of the road MSG show. Like, there's no super standout match, at least in my eyes, because I wasn't as high on Honky Steamboat. No mega draw, like no Savage, no Hogan. Not a ton of bad stuff, but some bad stuff. So I went 5 out of 10. To me, this is like right down the middle of an MSG show, a notch below last month, which had the great Hogan race match.
Yeah, this is an interesting one because, I mean, I've got a 4 and a couple of 3.5s, and then I got 2 duds. So, you know, what do you do? I'm going to go right down the middle, maybe go slightly higher. So I'm going to go 6.5. I wanted to go 7, but I think 7 might be a bit high. I'll go with 6.5 because the good stuff – because you go right down the middle and you think, is the good considerably better than the bad? Yes, because my one dud was Outback Jack, and that's a dud anyway. And – Dino is not going to let me ruin the awesome IC title match, the awesome tag match, and what I thought was a great hammer beefer match. So I go 6.5.
Oh, okay.
Pete? Yeah, I went 6.5 too with the 4-star match, and then I thought a couple of the other matches were really good. And we got lucky on the show. We got to have probably the 3 best baby faces on the roster working on the same card. Where, you know, if you know after Steamboat got done with Honky, where you could honestly want to see Honky work Martel and Tito also after that performance. So I enjoyed it a lot. And I thought they did a good job with grouping of the matches where you didn't get too many duds in a row, per se. You'd have like a bad match, a good match, bad match, good match, bad match, good match. So at least they alternated them and stuff. I just wish we would have gotten... You know, I honestly could have bought into having a little bit, cutting some of the shittier matches times down and giving it to the Bulldogs and giving it to the Steamboat. Give it to some of your workers who can actually use the time and have a funner match out of it.
All right. So we're pretty diverse on this one, guys. I was a little bit lower, and I thought I was high on some of the stuff coming in, so a little surprised to see I was lower. But it's a lot of fun. It was a good one to talk about. Pete, thanks for spending your New Year's Day with us, of course.
Thanks, Pete.
Anytime, fellas.
Great time as always. Scott, what do you got coming up? Main event on the next one?
We just had the main event last week. A great episode. We talked about some WWE stuff, and then we did our first TNA pay-per-view recap. Next week will be the main event. It'll be episode 92, and it'll be we will do our year in review. We'll recap the year in wrestling, WWE, Impact, you know, Ring of Honor, and everything. And we will do our second New Japan match pick, which I watched over the weekend, and it was fascinating. So that'll be next week on the show.
Very good. Jeff Lawrence Wrestling should be back in the next week or so, I think. We have to, of course, hype up Jeff's first live wrestling event coming up in a few weeks, 205 Live House Show. He's never been to a live show, so... Looking forward to that.
And you're torturing him with 205 Live?
Well, I thought it was a good one for him. Hear me out, right? Because I don't think he's ready to sit like through a fucking Raw or something.
No, indie show, I don't think
would pique him too much.
I wouldn't want anyone to sit through a Raw. Right. I don't even want to sit through a Raw anymore. Jeez.
So he's not going to sit through that. He's not going to shell out the money for a pay-per-view. We had Beyond Wrestling here for a while, but they moved up to Worcester. And right. we have Bennett's promotion locally, but I feel like he'll want some production value. And now Broken Matt Hardy is on the 205 Live tour, so that'll be cool.
That's true.
It's at URI, which is a tiny venue. I think it'll be like a quick two-hour show. So I think it'll be a good one for him to kind of get his first taste of wrestling live. I think he'll be into it. Plus, he likes kind of the cruiserish style. So.
Gotcha.
It should be fun. Of course, plenty of GWWE project stuff. Like I said earlier, the ballots are closed. We'll be churning out the written and podcast material soon, so stay tuned for that across our social media platforms. Thank you to everyone who voted, especially over the last like 2 days. We got like 45 or 50 votes came in like from like December 29th on, I think, or something like that. So really cool. We ended up with a really nice number, and we're really going to put together some good material for you coming out of that. Mm-hmm. So thank you Absolutely. For all your participation. As well. So subscribe to all of our feeds, PlayStation Wrestling, PlayStation Pop, Pro Wrestling Only. Check out our Star Wars podcast, too, of course, if you've seen the movie or if you haven't yet and you're going to see it soon. We had one with our comics troupe and then one on the Glenn Butler podcast. Our Spectacular both did great in-depth reviews of the movie, so be sure to check that out. I know both of you guys are big marks, so I know you both seen it, right?
Mm-hmm. I've seen it 3 times.
Yeah.
Sheesh. I just saw it once, but I probably will see it a second time.
Big old Mark.
Second time helped me a lot to digest some stuff.
Mm. Digest.
So
unpack
all of it. All right, so there you go. Check us all out. We'll be back next week with the August 87 MSG. Mr. D'Amato will be with us for that one. And by the way, we had teased originally we were going to have a new guest with us tonight that hadn't done an MSG show yet. It was supposed to be Chad, but once Georgia was in the playoff and all that stuff, that kind of fell apart. So Pete graciously rescheduled. He was supposed to do one later in the month, so he came on tonight. But
yeah,
we do have.
I have a feeling you guys probably set me up for a dudville anyway. So, old Chad, good one probably.
Definitely. So D'Amato's here next week, and then we do have some new guests coming later in the month of January into February. So we will be looking forward to that. So, all right, we're out. We'll talk to you next week. Everyone, enjoy. Have a happy and healthy 2018. Great to be here with you as always. Talk to you soon. Everyone, take care.
A facial spectacular.
La Bamba's facial
spectacular.
not for now.